One, two, three, four. Turn your lights down, way down low. Turn up that radio. It's Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve. Every night there's something new. You never know just.
Now, boys and girls, let's all run to the window, throw open the sash, and join Johnny in our weekly salute to the week that was. So, Julian, hello, you're awake now?
What? Yeah, I'm fine.
I, on the other hand, that feels good, though. Everybody should do that every now and then. Just let it rip. Just scream.
You know right now?
No.
Sure.
No. Ah! That's pretty good.
I'll try to get all the frustration out so then we can get on with, with the show.
Mm-hmm. It's been a week.
So. Yeah, it has been a week.
Yes. But we're here to chill. I heard Dan Hampton say today, and I thought that should be the motto for our show.
By the way, how cool it was, and I'm not saying this just because we work for this radio station. It was great to hear Hampton OB today, along with Andy Mazur.
So when he opened the show this afternoon, he said something, and I went, that's it. That's our motto now. We are the cheese on your crackers.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. We're the cheese on your crackers.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I've been accused of being cheesy before. But I'm not new.
Well, I've been accused of being crackers before, so we're good. We're good.
So we got it all right.
Yeah, it fits. It all fits.
How is everybody? Ron, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for bringing in the ham and cheese pie.
Yes, leftover Easter ham. It was a fabulous ham. $10 for that ham. Regular $41.68.
It was very good. Thank you.
So I couldn't let it go to waste, so I whipped up ham and cheese pies.
Did you put a picture of that on the interweb?
No, but I will.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a great recipe because you always have leftover ham. At least we do. And we had good hearty appetites at Easter.
I love ham and cheese pie. Ham and cheese pie.
We had eight side dishes, so we didn't eat much ham by the time you ate the eight side dishes. So today I thought, I can't let this go to waste, so I made packages of ham, popped them in the freezer, wrapped up the ham bone. I'll make some soup with that. And I thought,
now you got Carol Perkins' ham bone going through my head.
Okay.
We may have to play that later. Great song.
So then I made the ham with Vidalia onion and grated cheddar cheese. And
somebody is dinging.
Hey, that's Bob. He dings all the time.
Bob, is that you ding?
He's dinging.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. It's trying to tell him something, but he just ignores it.
Yeah.
Right, Bob?
Yep.
Because I said to him last week, I said, what's that? He goes, it's an alarm. It's just a, really, Bob? You just keep going about your business.
See, do you have it sounds like you have the same philosophy that Bob Collins used to. If it's important, it'll come back.
Yeah, pretty much, you know.
But it keeps coming back, Steve.
You know, 30 years being on call and, you know, when your beeper goes off, that's a whole different thing. You just kind of deal with it.
Do you remember the days of beepers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We had to have a beeper when we worked at this radio station.
Yep. And have we told that story?
Well, there was a gentleman on the radio that had the tendency to call in the very last minute.
Yeah, and Chicago Ed did that every now and then. We loved him, but it was one night, because we needed to get our... This was back in the early days of us being here, when Ed did a show, then we came on, and we needed to get our nap.
So we would be napping with the beeper on the headboard of the bed, and it would start vibrating the headboard of the bed.
Yeah.
And and I would look at Steve, and he'd look at me, and I'd say, I don't hear it. Do you hear it? No, I'm not hearing it.
And the night when it started vibrating, 10 minutes before the show was supposed to start, we said, you know... somehow that vibrated.
We're not dressed and we're a half hour away. I think it vibrated and it walked behind the bed.
Somehow it got lost behind the headboard of the bed.
It fell behind the bed. And we have a Scandinavian bed, which is a platform bed. It's probably still back there. If we ever hear what sounds like bees back there, it's the it's the beeper.
Either that or we have bees in the bedroom.
That could be too. No, I don't pull the darn bed out and vacuum behind it. So,
not with a Scandahoovian bed.
No.
Who's going to see it? Who's going to see it?
That's
anyway?
Right. Yeah, so. Now I'm embarrassed because I'm thinking about all the years that have accrued back
Who
there.
Who knows what goodies we may find back there?
Do you know what we mean by a Scandinavian bed? It's a platform. So we're only a couple inches off the floor. And your mattress drops into the platform.
It's like these slats that the mattress fit on. And under the slats, there are drawers. So it's actually a very cool setup.
But it's really, really big. And the headboard is connected to the nightstand. So if you wanted to move it to get a beeper.
And the nightstand's connected to the...
Oh, it's going to be one of those nights. Yep. We've got a big show coming up tonight.
We do. We got a ton of people coming in tonight. We've got Steve Burness, the man who is the president and chief executive officer of the Better Business Bureau of Chicago. He's going to join us, and we're going to talk about this. If you haven't heard it, you need to pay attention. A restaurant reservation scalping scam and a real ID scam.
Do you guys have your real ID? Bob, you got a real ID?
I have a passport.
Yeah, that's how I've got a passport card, too, so I'll carry my card.
I am so nervous. I'm so worried. I do not have the real ID, and I've got a plane trip scheduled for July. And I thought, I'll just get... No, I don't have a passport either. I just don't travel. So, and then I just found out that they're like 3 months out, as far as reservations. I just figured, I'll go down there. It's no big deal.
Passport's faster.
No, I'm worried. Yeah, so get a passport?
Yeah. You could actually go to the office downtown here and get your passport. It's for people who suddenly have to go overseas, for example, for funerals and things. You can get a quick passport.
And the last time we renewed our passports, we also got... this like a little
card.
Like a driver's license passport ID card.
I think it was $30 more.
Yeah.
But it was worth it instead of carrying my whole passport with me. So I'll just carry that with my ID. Because I don't have a real ID yet either. Steve, you have one. Yeah. Julian, do you have your real ID?
A what now?
Okay.
I think that's a no.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Okay. Well, so we'll talk about real ID scams. Also, a little later tonight, the weather is getting better, and that means the drive-in movie is opening.
Yes!
And we are going to talk with our friends Shelley and Paul Bottomley, who are the owners of the Route 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. And they just opened last weekend, and we're going to find out how the dancing hot dogs and buns are doing and stuff like that.
And if they have pickles on a stick yet.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, they got to get the pickle on the stick. That's all I'm saying.
Then a little later, Patrick Christman will join us from Las Vegas, Nevada. And we will get an update on all kinds of tech things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to talk to Steve Dawson, too.
Because
he's got some fun things to tell you about. And we'll tell you about some videos that we just posted with Steve Dawson.
And Ron, stick around, because
after
this break... I'm going to play, as we bump back, a song that has been running through the jukebox of my mind all day, and I think you will enjoy it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. In advance.
So stay tuned, you guys. You're listening to WGN.
Thank you.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. You can't play that without turning the speaker up to the threshold of pain. Dwayne Eddy and Ramrod. Today would have been Dwayne Eddy's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my all-time favorite Dwayne Eddy songs. And
I can tell because you did air guitar to every lick that Dwayne was playing.
But I was doing it in the right key. I was doing it in the key of A, as opposed to back in the days of my rock and roll youth, when we were going to learn some new songs, when I was learning new songs, I was learning them from the records.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the record, that's now this is something only guitar players will care about, but I'm a guitar player, so I care about it.
Go ahead, Boris.
So I had to learn it in the key of B flat. I didn't find out till later when we talked with Dwayne. Dwayne played that song in the key of A, but they speeded it up to the key of B flat, which also made it easier for the sax player to overdub the sax part on that.
So you're saying you learned it the hard way.
Yeah. And I found out, I love this because one of the times that I found out that I wasn't alone in this, do you remember years and years ago when there was this wonderful evening with Dwayne Eddy at the Ryman? This wasn't the Muriel Anderson thing. This mm-hmm. was the like a whole night of Dwayne Eddy.
Right.
And one of the guitar players on there was John Fogerty. And John Fogerty, as he was going to do that, he said that he also mm-hmm. learned it the hard way, playing it, because playing it in the key of A, it is relatively simple to play. But in the key of B flat, that's a whole nother animal.
I could tell, by the way, as you're talking, your hands are going there. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm following you.
But today would have been Dwayne's birthday. And Ron, I love the picture of Dwayne that you put up on your Facebook page.
Oh, got to turn the microphone on. I'm talking. I'm just like, oh, I love Dwayne Eddy. Wait, why am I not hearing that? Yeah, Dwayne Eddy is fantastic. I'm a fan, and just about everything that I hear from him. And anymore, you have to go to YouTube to listen to Dwayne Eddy.
Yeah.
And it's worth it. And you can certainly go down the Dwayne Eddy rabbit hole, and it's very worth it.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the humblest, sweetest human beings you could ever meet. Here he was, a record holder for the most instrumental hit records.
Of any rock and roll
category.
And he was also the first rock and roller to have a signature guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And a matter of fact, that was the Guild signature guitar on the picture that you posted, Ron.
Mm-hmm. He's big time.
And a cool guy. So cool. But we were so fortunate we got to spend a lot of time with them. I remember the night that we had a meal, we asked the chef to come out because the meal was so good. The four of us stood up at our table and applauded the chef in the restaurant. It was so good.
We were Dwayne and Deed's guests at a restaurant in Franklin, Tennessee.
Barbara Mandrell's son. Yes.
Yeah.
And the food was just like, oh, I've died, and this is truly heaven.
After we were done with the meal, we asked, could the chef come out? And we all stood up and applauded
And
him.
He was a little tentative. You could tell he's like looking out the door
Why do these people want me to come out?
And then we were standing there going, yes, bravo, bravo. And I was like, yes. And we got no leftovers to take back to the hotel room.
But this was today is Dwayne Eddy's birthday. Yeah. And throughout the show, we're going to be playing some different Dwayne Eddy music. We were fortunate to know him as a dear friend. Ron, as you know, he wrote the foreword to our Les Paul book.
Mm-hmm.
And just the nicest man.
Yeah. Wow. And just passed not too long ago, and the Ryman it was the Opry.
At the Opry House.
At the Grand Ole Opry House.
They just did a tribute to the Titan of Twang. It was about 2 weeks ago, and people like Peter Frampton were part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope somebody videoed it, and I hope at some point it will be available.
A nickname. We need a nickname. He was the Titan of Twang. We got to work on nicknames for everybody. something better than just like Bob the engineer, Ron the news guy, something.
I don't know. I'm okay with that.
Are you okay with that?
But, you know, the Titan of Twang, it's hard to beat that.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And there was something about a lot of the things that Dwayne did sounded simple.
Yes.
And there are tons of guitar players that learned how to play by listening to Dwayne Eddy's music. But to play it the way Dwayne did, I'll give you an example. There is his first record that charted was called Moving and Grooving. And it's a basically he's just doing single notes.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds simple. But the way he does it, there's a whole different feel to it. In fact, a moment that I will never forget was the first time that we were Dwayne and Deed's guests at their house, and Dwayne brought out that Gretsch 6120 that was his first guitar, and he let me play it. And
well, it's hard to play when you're levitating.
Yeah.
And you were. You were like, you know, a foot off the ground going, oh, Lord, look at me. I'm holding his first guitar.
But then I started to do a little bit of moving and grooving, and he said, here, let me show you.
Oh,
and he did.
Yes.
And it was just a simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little trick that he did that made all the difference in how it sounded, mm-hmm. even on, though it wasn't amplified.
I mean,
he was...
You know, one night, let's pull, because we have hours and hours of interviews with him.
Yeah.
Let's pull a little bit of interview, because just hearing his voice.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah, he was just so, as I say, just so humble and so soft-spoken. And
he told us stories of the early days when he was on some of the rock and roll tours,
mm-hmm.
and they would be on an integrated bus, but when they got to different towns.
And hotels.
He almost got in a fight, because at one point... they didn't want to let some of the black performers off the bus, and he almost got in a fight, and one of the performers said no.
Yeah, yeah. They were there to entertain the community, but they were told that they couldn't go in that hotel.
What a world.
Yeah,
a world.
And that wasn't that long ago, which is really crazy.
Right.
Well, I'm still working.
So throughout the show tonight, you will hear some Dwayne Eddy goodies.
And I'll just shout out your nicknames when I come up with them, okay?
Please do. Please do.
Did you have a nickname when you were a kid?
No.
No?
I don't know. Ronnie Rebel sounds good to me. Let's work on that one.
Okay. Steve, you had...
My brother Lee was called
Shorty. And your grandmother was called Steve, which was really interesting.
Yeah, one day my dad just decided to call my grandmother Steve. So when my dad would say Steve, both of us would turn around like, huh?
And her name was Pearl.
Yeah.
But we'll call her Steve. So you didn't really have a nickname, right?
Well, some of the kids in grammar school around eighth grade, when they found out that I liked Elvis, they started calling me Elvis. But
really?
That's the closest I ever came to a nickname.
41 years and this is the first I've heard of that, Elvis?
Yeah.
Really? Julian, nickname, did you have one?
Yeah, I still go by Slim to this day.
Slim?
Yeah.
Well, that fits.
I like that. That works.
My dad will sometimes add to it. He'll go, hey, what's up, Slim Pickens?
And you know there's a Slim Pickens, a person named Slim Pickens, right? Yeah. Okay. I was Jabberjaws.
I wonder why.
Hey. I embraced it, too. They were like, okay, Jabberjaws, enough.
I kind of like Zamboni Bob.
Yeah, well, that's good. I do like that. All right. I'm going to shut my mouth, and we'll take a break here on WGN.
It's the time and the place. Every line on your face, it's the truth and the lie. It's to live and to die. Oh, what a beautiful world. It's the girl and a boy, and that first
taste of joy. And it's that old photograph of two hearts torn in half. Oh, what a beautiful world.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Please let me be half that cool when I'm 92. That is Willie Nelson and his brand new album that just dropped this week. The album is called Oh, What a Beautiful World, and it celebrates Rodney Crowell with 12 new performances, most of them of Rodney Crowell songs, and Rodney is joining Willie on that.
Their voices are great together.
Oh, yeah.
But Willie, oh, I don't know, I get misty when I hear him singing. I'm just like, oh, you're just too cool. He will be 92 on Tuesday. That makes him a nanogenarian. I think nanogenarian. You're wrinkling your brow, Bob. You should know this stuff, engineer guy.
I'm not that close.
Nanogenarian. I did read an interesting interview with him. He says he doesn't hurt anywhere.
A little weed.
I was going to say, the wacky.
I think we know why he doesn't hurt.
The wacky weed helps with inflammation. I'm telling you, folks, it really does. Who's got arthritis when you got the wacky weed? But I thought that was pretty cool. He said, you know, people say, are you going to slow down? And is this like his 77th album, but the 100-and-something album with other people?
Right. It's his 77th, but he's been on, I want to say, like 139 albums. And he's still, he's doing, oh, what is the thing he's going to be doing in with Bob Dylan out on the left coast? Is it another one of the Farm Aid things or something like that? It's like in a month or two, he's doing another.
I hadn't heard about that.
He may be, again, for people who say, well, I'm sorry, I'm 90-some years old. I'm sorry. Age, yeah, there are some physical realities we all deal with, but you can still be productive, you can still have fun, you can still be creative. In your 90s.
You could still get stoned.
Yeah.
You know, at 92.
Yeah.
This interview, I think, is in Parade. It's going to be tomorrow. It's going to be released just in time for the release of his album and his birthday on Tuesday. And he said, you know, I've come to terms with the fact that nobody's going to live forever.
Yeah.
I came here to make music. I've done that. I've done some good stuff, too.
Yeah.
Some stuff I'm really proud of. So if I go tomorrow, I'm okay. You know?
And one of the many things I love about this record, and yes, we've ordered the record.
Be here tomorrow.
Yeah. One of the things I love about that is, along with Willie's distinctive voice, you can clearly hear Trigger, Willie's guitar.
His beat-up old guitar.
Yeah.
His loved up old guitar, because there's a lot of love that went into that.
And Willie is a wonderful guitar player.
He is. Yes, he really is.
He has a kind of a, for someone that has built his career on largely country / alternative music, he has a real jazz feel, kind of a Django Reinhardt sort of a style when he plays jazz. He's wonderful.
Well, this new album is music of Rodney Crowell, who's also a wonderful singer-songwriter and also a very humble, sweet human being.
We got to get in touch with her. It's been too long since we've had Rodney. The last time we saw Rodney was in his tour bus parked outside the Old Town School of Folk Music.
That was a great concert,
one of
too.
The best concerts.
Yes.
Oh, man, he's good.
I came across this quote about this new album. He said, considering that at age 14, I heard Willie's song, I Never Cared For You, on the radio. The very same day, I heard Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues.
Yeah.
Well, for the first time, I heard both of those songs, and that night I couldn't sleep for trying to figure out how either song came to be. Then 8 years later, when I vomited in John Lomax's backyard after I played him some god-awful song I'd just written, only to have him call me up on stage at the Palomino Club in North Hollywood to sing harmony with him. And what with the countless exchanges between then and when I heard Willie sing Stardust at his 90th birthday at the Hollywood Bowl, which, by the way, made me break down and snot drip cry for the sheer beauty of his performance, I'd say it's about bleeping time that Willie Nelson recorded an entire album of my songs. So thank you, Willie. That's one run-on sentence, but I think he gets gets the point across. Yeah. He's a good songwriter, too.
Oh, he is. And a wonderful performer.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever get the chance to see Rodney Crowell, jump on it.
But, as you say, we ordered the CD, one of three that we ordered this week.
Yeah.
We are keeping the industry going. You know, it's a rare week that we don't get two or three CDs delivered to the house.
And sometimes vinyl.
Yeah.
Depending on. No vinyl?
No, we do.
Well, we just got one a week ago, vinyl.
Our flight attendant, Mary Simich. She released her album that was recorded in Germany on vinyl. Mm-hmm. And she really was our flight attendant on Southwest Airlines and had a guitar on her back. And that prompted a conversation when she saw Steve's guitar pin and come to find out that she's a recording artist and darn good.
Yeah.
And beautiful to boot.
Well, there's that too.
And a great flight attendant.
Yeah. So.
Oh, Carol Burnett's 92 years old today. Again,
yeah.
To be, I'm not sure if she's not hurting like Willie, but to say you're 92 years old and still to be as full of life as both of them are, it's pretty amazing.
Well, we got a lot coming up. Stay with us. A little later, Patrick Crispin joins us from Lost Wages, Nevada. We're going to be celebrating the opening of the Route 34 drive-in in Earlville. Steve Burness of the Better Business Bureau joins us, and mm-hmm. we'll tell you how to avoid some real ID scams and some other scams. So a lot
There's
coming
too
up.
Too many scams to talk about.
Yeah,
we're
going
to
really.
Touch on the biggest ones that are going on these days.
Oh, and also, Patrick will have some information, some updated information on how to change your settings on Facebook.
Mm.
And it's some important stuff. And also, what's going on with Google Chrome.
Yes.
There may be some changes happening there, too.
A lot of stuff to cover with him. A lot of stuff to cover tonight. You're going to miss it if you're not here, because we are, after all, the
I think I'm going to stay.
We're the cheese on your cracker. Don't forget that on WGN.
WGN Radio. And that man is going to be in the studio with us next week. That's mm-hmm. Wayne Baker Brooks. That's his new single, Ain't No Use. He's got a new album. He's going to bring his guitar and hang out with us next week. So you want to be here. Wayne is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's working on a video. I got a text from him at 3:15 the other morning. And on my watch, it tells me that I got a text. And so I opened one eye and I looked at my watch. You know, is the world coming to an end? What's going on? And it was Wayne. I've been working diligently on a new mm-hmm. video and just now getting back to you. Wanted to tell you that I'm looking forward to doing the show. And I'm like, okay, Wayne, it's after 3. Of course, I'd only been in bed for about 45 minutes. So, oh, he's so cool. And we can bring in our new guitar chair. Our new chair just for guitar players.
Did we tell you guys about that?
Yes.
We were up at Guitar Works in Evanston, and
I saw
we were
one.
Looking around, and
yep, because it's a folding chair. And you're always great, Bob, about bringing in an armless chair, because these chairs are not conducive to guitar players, because they have to sit on the edge of the chair, and they've got these padded arms, and I'm always afraid they're going to slide out of the chair, and they're high chairs, too, and if you slid, it could be dangerous. But this chair has a back to it, and it's cushioned, and on the side, it's got a little bracket that you can rest your guitar and snap it so that your guitar sits next to you. You don't have to worry about it falling or anything.
It's a very cool
chair.
Yeah,
it is. And you just fold it up and hide it out. Can we find a hiding place for it, Bob?
Around here, there's plenty of places to hide.
Okay, okay. Good. Let's just keep it to ourselves, but don't let me forget where we hide it, all right? Because I do that with Christmas presents every year. I hide them and I go, dang, bought the best Christmas present back in July, honey, but I don't know where it is.
So that'll be next week. Wayne Baker Brooks will be joining us. And speaking of entertainment, Ron, you have a movie recommendation. I wonder if it's what I'm thinking of.
Well, hearing that blues music, I was like, I've got it.
But I know where you're going.
Sinners is just a crazy movie. I mean, it's a type of movie that I didn't expect. It's a vampire movie. I don't think anybody's surprised by that.
You're not giving it away, yeah.
But what was surprising was the music that's involved, and it is just very good and very surprising, and how it plays into the plot. Also, you think of everybody has heard the story about the blues being the devil's music, and Mississippi at the crossroads where the devil meets the. Well, in this movie, it kind of turns it upside down, and the blues music. Is more of a peaceful music and healing powers and the Irish folk music.
It
turns out to be the devil's music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad to hear you talking about this, because this is Johnny and I are going to go see it next week, and it sounds like just a
I love Michael.
Again, I don't want to give anything away, but as I understand, it kind of takes place in 24 hours with lots of flashbacks.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And
Michael B. Jordan is such a good actor, and he plays a dual role. And I guess, will you confirm that it's flawless?
Yeah, I mean, you forget that it's him in two roles, because it is. It's seamless. And there's also, there's a surprise, guest appearance at the end of it. It's just something that, I could do without, the blood spurting, I mean, it's not.
It's a vampire movie, so.
But, this, if you like Tarantino, this is Tarantino times 10, as far as the blood spurting goes. So there's that. But it's just a cool, there's cinematic moments that you're not expecting, and all of a sudden, like, wow, where did that come from? This is supposed to be just a vampire movie.
Now, did you see it in IMAX or how?
No, it was not IMAX, but I can imagine that it would be even better there.
Because I think it's available in three different versions that are at the theater that we frequently go to. And IMAX was one of the versions, and I thought, I don't need to see the blood spurting right at me, and I'm cool with standard.
See, that's not the attraction, and it shouldn't scare. So that it appeals to a wide range of people, but there's messages. It's about spirituality. It's about racism. It's about hoodoo. And it's there's a lot in a vampire movie.
I've got to say though that out of the music, because we were going to pick up the soundtrack, the music that I'm least impressed with is actress Hailee Steinfeld. She wrote the theme song for the movie. She sings it.
And I thought I was really going to like it, and it was like, oh,
it's cheesy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
She does not sing in the movie, so.
Oh, so it's on the album, but
so
not,
it's on the album. Yeah.
She's not.
She's in the movie. She's very good. She's a very fine actress, but she doesn't sing. So.
I guess the first thing we saw her in was the remake of True Grit.
I think that was her first movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was wonderful.
She's really good. Yes, and she actually does have a singing voice. It's just the song is really lame compared to the other music. In fact,
it could be any female pop
this person that's auto-tuned.
Today. Yeah,
so
exactly.
That you're just like, okay, are you singing words? I'm not hearing them because it's all.
Yeah.
And get off my lawn while you're at it. one person that's included in the soundtrack, I'm thrilled for him, is Bobby Rush.
Yeah, that's
Chicago
so cool.
Own Bobby Rush and Buddy Guy. They're both on the soundtrack. Yeah.
Bobby Rush, I wish he would have made an appearance in the movie. That would have been cool.
Yes, yes. In fact, he's doing Blues Fest, and we said, well, that's a good excuse for us to replay the interview that we did with him, because we spent an hour and a half with him, and he just told his life story, and it was wonderful.
And we would have loved to have been able to have him back in the studio again, but the night that that's going on, we're going to be out in California, so mm-hmm. we're going to do replays, so why not replay Bobby Rush?
Yep, yep.
I believe, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think wasn't Sinners number one at the box office last week?
I think for 2 weeks in a row, it's doing mm-hmm. very, very well, and it's great, because like I said, it's going to introduce blues music and blues tradition and blues mythology to a much younger audience, and that is just...
Yeah,
surprising.
That's always a good thing.
Because how many times have people written off the blues as well? It's a dying art form. It's never going to be, you know, it's on life support. But it'll make a big comeback if this success has anything to say about it.
Do you remember the movie Crossroads?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That, Macchio. Yeah. If you guys have not seen Crossroads, look for it, because that's a terrific movie. And
I'm trying to think of who was it that played. Was it Eddie Van Halen or who? No,
that
who
played the music?
Yeah, who played the guitar in that?
Because Ralph Macchio didn't actually do the playing,
no.
but the music was.
He learned how to play, so yeah. He could mime it
yes.
really well.
Yes, unlike. Was it the movie about Django Reinhardt?
Yeah, it was.
With Sean Penn.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Sweet and Lowdown.
Sweet and Lowdown. I went to that movie because I love Django Reinhardt. I went to the movie with really high expectations. Never do that. And I loved the soundtrack. I was distracted by how bad he was when he tried to emulate someone playing it. It's like he wasn't even paying attention. It was awful.
You're whispering to me, his hands are in the wrong place. He's not playing that. This is wrong. I'm thinking, okay.
Didn't we see that at the Skokie Theater?
No, Evanston.
Was it Evanston?
Yeah, the great old Evanston that was on Central.
Oh,
little
yeah.
theater on Central.
That's right,
yeah, that was a nice little theater.
That's a remake. I think of La Strada. Maybe it's a
yes.
Fellini movie.
Yes, yeah. yes. I'm laughing, though, because I'm thinking about, it was at that Evanston Theater we saw the Fabulous Baker Boars. Where the
boys, not boars.
When the nanogenarian stood up and decided to sing when the...
It's the scene where she's, Ron, help me with this, she's on the piano.
Piano writhing in the red dress.
Making whoopee.
Making whoopee.
You know, one of the key scenes in the movie, and the woman in front of us decides to stand up and start singing along with it.
We're like, no, please. And her caretaker is trying to sit her down, like, please, Grandma, sit down. You're embarrassing me. It was a moment.
That's a memorable one, but one you don't want to remember.
Yeah. Michelle Pfeiffer. It took me a moment. I finally, I could see her on top of the piano, but I'm like, oh.
And one of the last movies that both Bridges were
maybe.
In?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bo and Jeff.
Oh, yeah. As brothers in the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another goodie. We just haven't been to the movie in the longest time. Ron, we're going to call you sometime. We're going to do an afternoon outing and go to a movie together.
Oh, that'd be great. I love the movies.
Yeah, I know you
movies.
Do.
I'm interested to hear what you would think about this movie, because I said it's unexpected. There are things that you may not like, but there are going to be a lot more things, I think, that you do like.
Well, I love vampire movies. I'm big on vampire. Yeah. In fact, we may be two of the only people that love the Lincoln vampire movie.
Oh, I saw that too.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Slayer.
Vampire
wonderful
Slayer.
Movie.
Based on a true story.
Now, Bob is just shaking his head. Have you ever seen this movie?
No.
It's
you
so
need,
good.
You would love it.
The dude that plays Abe Lincoln was brilliant.
He was.
And,
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away anything, Bob.
Yeah.
But there's one scene where Abraham Lincoln is riding his horse on the top of a train and slaying vampires.
It is such a cool movie.
Based on a true story.
Yes. That's right. And coming from a newsman, you have to believe him when he says based on a true story.
Abe Lincoln was a true person, so.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio taking care of business. And there's a lot of business to take care of right now.
Is there ever? In fact, it was last week on the show we touched on a story, a news story that we'd come across, and that made us realize that we had to get our next guest on the radio. Steve Burness is the president and chief executive officer with the Better Business Bureau of Chicago and Northern Illinois. How are you tonight, Steve Burness?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Well, last week on the show, we said we saw Steve on television talking about something called restaurant scalping. And we said, what is happening in this world?
And just at the point where you think you've heard of all the scams, somebody says, okay, hold my beer.
Yeah. So what is restaurant scalping? Why is that a big concern in Chicago?
There's a couple parts to it. First, it's third-party software companies are really going on and taking the reservations from the restaurants and then reselling it to consumers. So they're like hoarding and taking, you know, really pirating all those reservations. And then, therefore, they're selling them then to others. If they don't sell them, the restaurants then are not, you know, have open seating as well. And sometimes those prices are, you know, $20 up to hundreds of dollars as well.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a lot. And so there's some legislation trying on the state to try to prevent this from happening. But right now they're seeing this increase in these types of complaints. And sometimes the consumer is using these third parties, vendors other than the majors. These are, again, third party reservation companies that nobody's ever heard of, some of them. They get to the restaurant, they actually don't have a reservation either then. So they paid the money on that site, and they didn't have it either. So just got to deal with the well-known, reputable ones.
Well, the flip side of it, too, is the restaurateur thinks that, in fact, they have a full house coming that night.
And they wound up
sometimes they
not
don't
having
have,
anybody.
Yeah, and so they've prepared for a busy night, and it's like, okay, where is everybody?
Yeah, it affects their bottom line that way as well. A lot of no-shows that come out of this because those bots go out and get those reservations from the restaurants and put it in their name, and they try to resell it on the market. And sometimes they can't resell it, so therefore the restaurants are not to capacity what they should be.
So is the solution to just call up the restaurants and make the reservation in person, or if there is one or two, if there are one or two reputable apps you would suggest, what would they be?
Well, you can contact the restaurant and see what app they use. Most obviously use OpenTable, and there's another one called Resy. Those are the two main ones. But contact the restaurant and see what they use, and that's the one you should deal with.
Or if they allow you to call them personally, if they've got someone that's working the desk and would take your reservation, I'd feel much more comfortable. But, Lord, do not pay $200 for a reservation. In that story, I was stunned to think that somebody would actually pay $50 for a reservation.
Those restaurants are hard to get into. Some of those restaurants, they fill up quickly or last-minute reservations, and there you go online, and there it is. So
I don't have
the credit card number.
I don't have the answer to this, but are there a number of restaurants that only take reservations via app that don't let call up? Because I would... color me old school on this. I want to call and I want to say, okay, can I be there at this time? And also, personally, I need to check and make sure that they would serve gluten-free food. But
my experience has been most of them, if you actually go to the website for the restaurant and you want to make a reservation, it takes you to an OpenTable. But that's my experience has just been with OpenTable. I'm not actually talking to anyone at the restaurant. I think that's pretty common, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, it's common. You go right directly to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. They put you right through the vendor they use.
Right.
But the ones we're concerned about are the third-party ones, those software companies that start charging a fee for it when those hard-to-get restaurants, and sometimes you may or may not get it.
Wow.
So theoretically, if you want to make an online reservation, theoretically, going to the restaurant's website and clicking on their app would work until somebody decides that there is a way to scam their app.
Right.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, best go to the restaurant's website, and they'll usually have the vendor they use for the reservations. Most times you can't call the restaurant. They can still take it over the phone as well.
Wow. Restaurant scalping. Just, you know, I've said this so many times in my life. People say, you know, that dumb crook. I'm thinking, no, crooks may be the smartest people that are in our community today, because they come up with things that when I hear it, I'm thinking, how? Why?
But let me hold you on this for a second, Steve. If someone is a victim of that, is there anything that they should do, any credit card they should be using, some way that they should try to stack the deck as much as possible so they won't be out if this is a phony reservation?
Yeah, use your credit card anytime you can, because it's even safer than a debit card. Then you can file a claim with the credit card company. But, you know, sometimes, I'm not saying on this specific one, but a lot of times credit card companies, don't side with the consumers like they used to in years ago. They kind of look at each case individually and decide it's whether or not you'll get a refund. And I hear from a lot of consumers who are unhappy with the credit card company because they've been duped, and the credit card company siding with the bad business or the scammer in some way. So you just got to be just deal with your credit card company. It's the safest way of doing business.
Before we take a break, I'll just say the flip side of that is I became good friends with a woman at my credit card company because I had challenged a charge, and we got to talking, and she said, girl, you wouldn't believe how many times I get reports on this. And, you know, a half hour later, Steve says, who are you talking to? I said, I'm talking to my friend at the credit card company. We talked about everything, and the interesting thing was she talked to me long enough to know that my complaint was legit and that she had heard similar complaints about the company. Right. So it really was helpful in that respect because she said, you know what, we're going to get to the bottom of this. And she did. So patience is important, too.
Exactly. Squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Right. The pleasant squeaky wheel.
Right.
And Steve, last hour we touched on the fact that the deadline is coming up for the Real ID. And I'm not surprised. There are bad people taking advantage of the fact that we've got this deadline coming up, right?
You're right. Exactly, Johnny. They read the, listen to the radio, read the newspapers as well, and they exploit these types of situations. You know, scammers always employ various tactics to, you know, deceive unsuspecting individuals. So if you get a call or a text or an email offering you help with your Real ID, it's most likely not going to be the Illinois Secretary of State. They don't reach out to you.
Right.
You reach out to them. So that's a tip-off to the rip-off, as we like to say. But as it gets closer to the deadline of May 7th, they will only intensify their efforts, as we see happens all the times with situations like this.
Isn't this a case of where it's, in a way, this is a scam that's a lot easier to detect? You will never be called by the Secretary of State.
Right.
So if somebody is calling you,
or as a listener,
or if you get an email,
a listener texted last week and said they had received a text on their phone that said,
right,
urgent, you, and I guess maybe when they send out thousands of those, they're going to hit upon somebody that doesn't have their Real ID yet, and they see it and they go, well, that's me. And if there's a link in that text, do not click that link, right, Steve?
That's so important, Johnny. You just don't click on those links, especially if it's unsolicited email or text offering you, you know, to help you in some way. Even if it's, you think it's from your bank, I'd rather you not click on that link and go to your bank's website directly and talk to them. It's so hard to determine today if an email or a text is accurate or not, or from a scammer posing as somebody else. On the phone, you can't hover over that link to see where it's actually going like you can on a PC or laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting to a point we ask consumers not to answer their phones unless it's somebody in their contact list. Let it go to voicemail and don't click on any links that are come unsolicited because they can do damage to your, not only steal your identity and all that by clicking on those links, asking for information. They can lock up your phones.
Mm-hmm.
You can lock up your computer. They can hold it hostage. And we talked about it, you know, last time I was on. They had a law firm. They had to pay $1 million recently to get their files back because the receptionist clicked on a link in a phishing email and locked up their systems, and they were able not to get to their client files.
Well, I remember the last time we talked, we were talking about the amazing texts that we've all been getting from the tollway. And boy,
I just got one of those this week.
They are so,
I got mine today.
They are so official looking. I mean, you know in your heart of hearts, and in fact, it happened to me shortly after we had the conversation with you, Steve. And I looked at my phone and I thought, well, I don't know. This one's probably real. And what I did was I just went to the Illinois Tollway and saw that, no, we don't have anything that is outstanding. But yet I went back and looked at that text, and gosh, it was good. And that's how we get sucked into it.
They make it.
It
look so real.
Right.
And aren't there really two of the classic ingredients when we talk about the Real ID scam? One, they're contacting you. Two, they're contacting you. And there's a little bit of pressure because you want to get this done. So you're kind of stressed. So, yeah, like, can we take care of this?
Right, because you owe money. They want you to jump on it. They want you to not even think about it. I don't owe money. How much do I owe? And that's what they usually put, that time-sensitive nature on it, that you got to do something quickly or you'll pay, fines will get higher, or you'll lose your driver's license. We've seen so many different variations. And people keep asking me, why is this? They continue because it works.
It does.
They would stop. They would completely stop if it doesn't work. And it's just only increasing. I got one today myself, and I got, you know, probably 10 this week. I had my, you know, my cell phone since the, you know, the bag phones back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. And I had the same number, so I'm on every list possible you could imagine over the years. And it just continues unabated. But we want also consumers to report it to the Better Business Bureau Scam Tracker, because we take all this information on scams all across North America. And that information is fed to the governmental, specific governmental agencies and police departments, you know, all across North America. So please go to our scam tracker.
Sure.
If you see a scam, and even if you don't fall for it, that's most importantly, so we can warn others.
And where do you suggest people go to sign into the scam tracker?
It's bbb.org is our main website, and it's, mm-hmm. it's /scam tracker. So all that information is on there, and you just type in BBB Scam Tracker at Google prompt. You'll get into our scam tracker, and you can see scams in your neighborhood, what happens. If you get a letter from the IRS and you think it's a scam, go to Scam Tracker, and you type in IRS, and you'll see all the scammers, all the people that talk about the scams that they received. We keep track of phone numbers. We keep track of web addresses. So if you get a phone number on a card or on a text, you can put that phone number there, and we can tell you where it's linked to, what scam, and what part of the country. So, but it's most important, it goes to the authorities, too. They get access to our database, the Centennial database through the FTC. So we dump all our data in there. So please go to Scam Tracker. The only way to put scams out of business, though, you know, Steve and Johnny, is not to give them your business. So we want consumers, please check with us first before clicking on any links. And we got resources, a lot of resources on BBB.org.
I want to hold on a word you just used that we should make people aware of. You used the word centennial.
Centennial's coming up.
Yeah.
Well, when is that going to be?
August 22nd of 2026, the BBB turns 100 here in Chicago.
Wow.
So we're very excited. We've been planning since August of last year, and it's really over the years of thousands of board of directors and the thousands of employees that we had over that time.
Can I take you back? If you obviously you weren't working for the company then.
Sure. Thankfully.
But how did the Better Business Bureau first get started?
Coca-Cola.
What?
So that's
Coca-Cola. They were sued in 1906 for false advertising. They went into court to defend themselves and basically told the judge, you know, all ads are somewhat misleading and fraudulent everywhere. And Samuel Dobbs, our founder, was in the courtroom, and he's the future president of Coke. And he said, wait a minute, I run an ethical organization. I want my ads to be truthful. So it turned into a vigilance committee, the Better Advertising Bureau, and then turned into the Better Business Bureau movement in 1912. So our main organization is 113 years old, the BBB movement. We started 4 years after the FBI and 2 years before the Federal Trade Commission.
Wow. Yeah. Is there a place on the BBB website where you can find some of this history? That's fascinating.
Yep, it has all our history in there. Yep, in BBB.org.
I would love to see some of the earliest complaints that people took to the BBB. I mean, life was so much simpler because we didn't have the technology we have today.
Right. Yeah, you still had the snake oil and those hair tonics, all those types of scam. Working at home goes back to the 20s.
Oh, I bet the door-to-door guys,
door-to-doors,
too.
Door-to-doors.
Yeah.
Yep. Encyclopedias, all
yes.
that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Were they literally going after some of the snake oil salesmen back in the day?
They were, and they were going after the advertisements as well. And the BBB used to sue companies before government was set up to sue. The Better Business Bureau sued companies on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois. Then government got involved, and you know they took upon that role. But we started advertising regulations, and then we turned into Better Business Bureau, and then we started helping consumers shortly thereafter. So we started as a business organization, only helping businesses protect advertisements and. And we moved into the consumer world, and there we are today, almost 100 years later here in Chicago. And our founding fathers here in Chicago was Sears, and the Chicago Tribune was founding supporters. You're right.
So Illinois was the first state to have anything resembling the Better Business Bureau?
No, that was in Minnesota. That was 1912 in Minnesota.
Okay.
It was the first office.
The Tribune was one of the... Movers
founding
and shakers.
Fathers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Weebolt's department stores. I don't know if you remember
Weebolt's
that name.
Oh, yeah. My favorite store. Everybody
Elmer
else,
Weebolt.
Everybody else loved Marshall Fields, and I was a Weebolt's girl.
I was a Weebolt person, too, yes.
Weebolt's had a great lunch counter.
They did. Yeah. And the ice cream, too, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Which Weebolt's did you go to, Steve?
Oh, I think it was on State Street.
Mine was Lincoln and Belmont. That was our Weebolt store with the wooden floors that I can still in my head, I can hear the squeaking floors on the seventh floor. And the windows that they would have to raise with the chains when it was a really hot day because it wasn't air conditioned, those ginormous windows would lift up and you get that breeze coming in. It was good. I know Fields was great, but Weebolt's was pretty darn good, too.
That's true.
All right. Some of the other things. We're at income tax time. Are you getting a lot of people reporting that they are concerned because they're getting bugged about you got to file your taxes or somebody else's? This is what terrifies me, that somebody else could actually file your taxes in your name and get your refund.
It happens quite often more than people think. So, unfortunately, by now you'll probably get a notice that your taxes were filed by somebody else when you're waiting on your return. That's usually what happens.
Oh, my gosh.
And then usually after tax season like this, they'll call you up and say, you missed some information. We need to verify your Social Security number and try to steal your identity. So, anybody calling you out of the blue and threatening you or you need something, you're going to get to jail or your taxes are going to not work or you're not going to get the money, that's the tip off to the rip off. Just go directly to irs.gov and directly to those other websites directly. Don't listen to those callers or those texts.
And use your head. I mean, there's been a cutback in manpower, person power at the IRS. They ain't got somebody sitting there making phone calls, so they're not going to call you to tell you, give us your Social Security number while we're at it.
Right.
As the weather gets warmer and we hear more and more about some concert tickets going on sale, but now we need to be concerned about that too, don't we, Steve?
You're right. Scammers hope to put the con in concert tickets, unfortunately. What happens is they create these fake websites or they look like they're ticket brokers when they're actually not, and they really just want to steal your money. And again, with electronic ticketing, people think, well, it should be better with electronic ticketing, but consumers are led to believe that they will send the electronic tickets after they get payment. And sometimes they ask for unusual payment, like gift cards or something else, so you can't stop the credit card transactions and those things, or wiring money because they got to quickly get the money, or they ask to meet. Some have actually met, and they give them they'll send an electronic ticket and they don't get anything. And especially happens with the hard to get concerts, and even a Taylor Swift. Last time she was in Chicago, and it's somebody, my niece fell for it, unfortunately. It's just nonstop with concerts.
And are they intentionally picking some of the big name concerts because you mentioned Taylor Swift? going into the Taylor Swift concert, you know you're talking about a significant amount of money.
Yes, the more harder to get the tickets, and the more popular the venue, the scammers go after those first and foremost, especially sold out events, you know, any type of those concerts that are sold out months ago. Unfortunately, they create these fake websites, so the first two positions on Google are advertisements, yeah. And people don't pay attention to that, so they think they're dealing with the venue, and it has the venue name in there, but it's third, you know, it's mm-hmm. XYZ venue, and people are thinking they're talking directly to the venue, and some are ticket brokers who are charging an arm and a leg for those tickets as well, even though they're licensed. So, and you think you're dealing with the venue, so you just got to be careful buying tickets, and especially the hard to get tickets, because that's usually what the scammers try to go after.
But if you bite and you actually buy gift cards to purchase your tickets to pay this scammer, I don't feel sorry for you, because right there, that's a red flag. Nobody legitimate is going to say, send me $500 in gift cards and you can have your ticket. I don't feel sorry for you if that happens to you.
Yeah, unfortunately, they got the tickets, and that they do anything to get those tickets.
Yeah,
do those things increase as you get closer? For example, the night before the concert, hey, I've got you want front row seats? I've got them.
Yeah, day of sometimes as well. You know, sometimes people get to these venues, you know, these smaller concerts, and they realize they can't get in. So it happens quite often.
I'm glad you mentioned, though, when you Google, for example, a concert venue or a ticket salesperson. I recently, just within the past week, experienced something, and I almost got caught. I was Googling a hotel that we'll be staying in California, mm-hmm. because I wanted to make our reservation. And as you said, Steve, the first few things that pop up are advertisements. But I wasn't thinking. I just see the name of the hotel in the first thing. And I start to book the room. And I thought, wow, it's really expensive this year. It's like double what it was last year. And before I put in my credit card, I went, this just doesn't seem right. And I backed out. And sure enough, it wasn't legit.
Yes, it happens all the time, and that's been going on forever, it seems like.
Yeah.
These, you know, bad businesses create these fake companies, and it looks like they're, you know, helping you.
It's
a broker service, and they pay these extra fees are on there. And you're right, some of them are double, even sometimes triple. And
a $225 room was $400, and I thought, whoa, wow.
I hadn't heard this story, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because in my phone, I have the number to their front desk.
Yes,
we will call
the front desk. Absolutely.
Right.
All right, before we let you get out of here, Steve, I definitely want to talk about this survey the Better Business Bureau did on the subject of trust and loyalty. What was this all about?
We have about 50,000 consumers in our database. We wanted to see what consumers felt if they, you know, working for businesses, if they felt they can trust them or not as businesses. And shockingly, our BBB survey reveals that 50% of respondents work for businesses they don't trust. 50%. That's a lot. That's half of the people work for businesses they don't trust.
I have to ask, was there any classification of business that had a higher distrust,
like white collar versus
or car dealers or whatever?
No, we didn't go that deep with it. We plan on doing more with this, finding out more. We went to age demographics, and it came across the whole thing, all the demographics rather. But yeah, we didn't go into the industries, but we may be looking at in the very near future on that. And we also did another question. 70% of unhappy customers leave a business for good. So what happens if you have a problem with the business, the business doesn't rectify it, 70% don't come back. So it's really a wake-up call for businesses to work on that trust factor and to take care of and resolve those issues, because those are consumers that don't come back to you.
Sure.
And we've talked about this before. There are some businesses that we've been associated with for years, largely because if there was a problem, they took care of the problem, and by mm-hmm. taking care of the problem, they got a lifetime customer.
Exactly. And that doesn't hold water anymore today, unfortunately. Those businesses, even refunds and exchanges, have been limited in many different ways. The time's shorter, or you get in-store credit. Before, some organization, you bought anything, you could take it back. And it's not the case anymore. Business has really changed, and I've been doing this for almost 37 years now. And it seems to be getting a little bit more difficult for consumers, and they're getting a little bit more not trustworthy of businesses as well.
Is part of it because some businesses have been purchased by offshore companies?
It happens with a lot of times private investors, PI, buy those companies, and it's all about the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And they don't care about customer loyalty like the companies did. And you're right, offshore companies and, the foreign companies that come in, I've seen that all the time. Companies that were very good ratings with us, and all of a sudden they're bought by a private investor or by a foreign company, and they don't care about the consumers as much as the other company did. And it really shows in the complaints. And some companies went from A+ to F rating, it seemed like overnight.
Whoa.
And it's like, it's very alarming. So just because company advertises or has a physical presence, please, consumers, check on those businesses, because our business profiles change, by the hour on companies. It's depending on how that company is acting in the last 3 years, but also indicative of what's happening today.
Or sometimes a company may go out of business and somebody buys the brand name.
Yeah. Right?
It happens all the time. They think it's the same company. It's not. And the company's value is increased by buying that name because they think it's the same company.
Well, in fact, the company that I was challenging with my credit card company was a company that used to be a mega department store.
Sure.
And that name was purchased by an unsavory group that I said, no, I fell for it, but I'm fighting you on this because they were just basically stealing money. And in fact, that's why I was bonding with the woman at the credit card company. She says, you wouldn't believe the number of people that are calling about this company. Before we let you out of here, Steve, a listener says, so often we talk about protecting our credit. She says, I have credit being monitored by Experian, and I got a notice that it expires in 5 days. What do you recommend I do? Number one, I'm surprised you're getting a notice that it expires.
Yeah, depending on what expires, I'd look into it further and go to Experian's website directly and don't do anything with that particular letter, because you never know what that letter, who that email is from.
I think,
go to Experian directly.
I could be wrong, but I think the basic credit monitoring is free, but there are other tiers you may be paying for. But I would look into it. As you say, go to Experian, find out what plan you're on before you do anything.
And if, in fact, it's expiring, because if you're getting like an email and you respond to it, does that mean you're going to put your credit card information in? How ironic that you're protecting your credit and you might be feeding it into some bad guy.
It could be an imposter asking, then they'll ask for your social security number to get into your account. So, yes, please don't follow that letter. Just go directly to the website of Experian.
The bottom line is we all feel that you should have your credit protected
frozen.
By a company. Yeah, ideally frozen. Right.
And you should review your credit report, too. I think people don't do that enough. So annualcreditreport.com is the main website that is endorsed by the government for protection for consumers. So annualcreditreport.com. You even get your children's credit report, because people don't realize that identity thieves steal children's identity as well.
Mm-hmm. And they can check you out at bbb.org.
Correct.
Well,
before you buy or hire, BBB it.
Okay.
Thank you, as always, for joining us. Every time we see one of these stories, we go, we got to talk to Steve. We got to get the word from him from the Better Business Bureau. Thanks.
People say I have a face for radio.
We saw you on television. That's why we called you this week. Thank you, Steve. Have a good night.
Hey, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Bye-bye now.
More coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
You know you make me wanna shout. Look, my hands jumping. Look, my heart's bumping. Throw my head back. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Yeah, don't forget to shout. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know you make her wanna cough. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You know you make her wanna.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
You got all choked up at the way that I was reading that Ukraine spot.
You're
it was so,
good.
So emotional. And,
yes. Okay. Gosh, I didn't realize my microphone was on, though. So forgive me. It's only 112 in here right now. That's why I'm coughing.
Should I come over there and fan you?
Yes, please.
Okay.
And bring the grapes with you, please. Okay. Jan and Norb are listening in Pittsburgh tonight, and I don't know that Pittsburgh has ever checked in on our Saturday night show. Laura and her fur baby Cotton are tuned in from Willowbrook. Susan's in the 847 area code. Jim G's in Wisconsin. Dean is in Indy. Sherry Hanrahan is out in Romeoville. Hey, Sherry. Stacy Drager is in Algonquin. Robin's in Dyer, Indiana. Sherry and Bob in Arlington Heights. Hello. David Shine is in Mount Prospect. Ann Arbor. By the way, David is a SEN graduate, and I did post a quick shot. I got a SEN high school, my alma mater, as we are driving into work tonight. Ken is in Ann Arbor. Celine Ellers and Laura Helm are tuned in. Also, Peter Jukabowitz and Gail Maslin are listening. Gail's in Tinley Park. Norb Rosansky, Jim Smith, Roy Phillips, Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru. She's tuned in tonight. Betty Wilkins is in St. Louis. Ed Wales is in the UP, the Upper Peninsula, by Silver Lake in the Michigan Highlands, Moose Country, and he sends a lovely picture. Oh, boy, sunset picture. And speaking of pictures, Eric Baum listens to us in Wells Beach, Maine, and he sent a picture of something that looks like a lunch, but I'm going to guess that's lobster. I'm not 100% sure, but it looks good. Chuck Snitchler, best friend of this here radio show and station, is listening from Hobart. Our buddy Bobby Danos is out in Sandwich at the Manor. He's tuned in. Susie Mays in Spring Valley. Margot Moore. That's a name. That's an actress name. Margot is.
Wasn't there a Margot Moore?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. She's in Albuquerque now. She's given up acting.
And or a singer.
Margot Moore. But I'm thinking Colleen Moore. Colleen Moore is the...
Colleen Moore is the one who did Little Village that
the
you
Dollhouse.
Could see at... the Dollhouse, yes. At the Museum of Science and
right,
Industry.
Right. This is called webbing. This is what happens when your mind just goes all over the place and you start webbing. Sharon Brask Malone is in K-Town. Nancy Nosek's in South Holland. Robin Aiken's in Port Charlotte, Florida. Roy Phillips is tuned in Northwest Illinois. Thanks, Roy. Nancy Hollins is listening from Northbrook. Patsy Kohlner's in Kenosha. Diane Kappas is in Prospect Heights. Lynn Kinzer is in San Antonio, Florida. Louise Palish is tuned in. My sister Linda Meyer from Stevens Point, Wisconsin is listening on WGN with me and Mike tonight. Well, good. It's a family affair. And now you know what I'm singing in my head.
It's a family.
A little sly. Mary Gold is listening from Tinley Park. Jan Reinhardt is tuned in from the laboratory. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah. Priscilla Gilbert Stagg is in Joliet. By the way, Diane Vasquez sent us an adorable Hello Saturday Relax graphic for tonight. Michelle Fairfield is in Peoria. Larry Mann is in Miami. Nancy Tomaszewski is in West Allis. Rita Reagy's in Denton, Texas. Susan Powell's in Memphis.
Yes.
Patty Cummings Barron is tuned in from Whitewater, Wisconsin. I think that's a first for us on a Saturday night. Nancy Witts in Milwaukee. Bonnie Pearson with Lola from Grays Lake. Roger Camp is in Somerville, South Carolina. Our buddy Brian Lefevre is, thank goodness Chicago's listening. He's in Bridgeport. Sandy McCumas is in Michigan City, Indiana. Gene Jacobson's in Milwaukee. Kathy Abnor is in Peoria. Also, Ellen Maria is in McHenry County. Helen Thomas is in K-Town. Debbie Tussick is in Earlville. Ryan Corcoran's in Waukesha. Judy B's in Oak Lawn. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Mary Prudence is in Evergreen Park, Illinois. Patrice Tintara is in Northwest Indiana. Judy Graham is tuned in, still recovering from not one, but two broken legs.
Oh.
There's got to be a story there, Judy. Send me the story on that. Beverly Goodall is listening in Highwood, Illinois. And speaking of stories, real quick, I want to go to our pictures driving into work tonight. There's about 20-something pictures I posted.
And you can see those if you go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. And you will see a ton of interesting pictures that we posted as we were driving.
Right. I tried to label them, too, so you know that that big building is Senn High School. That we drive by, and the traffic is moving so quickly as we cross Clark Street on Hollywood that I rarely am able to get a glimpse of my alma mater. And sure enough, tonight, that was because there was so much traffic, we were driving a little slower as we crossed that intersection.
I just realized you didn't put up the hot dog picture.
Oh, I didn't. The Wolfie's picture.
Yeah, could you add that?
I will add that.
Yes. That was a great picture.
Speaking of pictures, though, under the pictures of our drive into work tonight, John Couture wrote something quite interesting and included a picture of him in cap and gown. He says, "Hey," he said, he's in Michigan. "I just wanted to share with everyone about my high school graduation photo." "I finished high school last summer, but I had to wait till this June to walk across the stage to accept my full high school diploma. I'm 49 years old and finally graduating from high school."
Good for you.
"I was really sick, and I had a number of challenges when I was a teenager. And so congratulations, John Couture." He says, "Thank you both. I enjoy listening to your show." And again,
that's really cool.
That's awesome.
Good for you.
Yeah. Gave me goosebumps. That's really cool. And it's nice of you to go ahead and post your picture, too, so we could all say congratulations, John.
And also, let me mention some of the countries that are checking out our blog.
Oh, yeah.
And you should check it out. Go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And let's see, the U.S., tons of people from the U.S., Sweden, Ireland is checking in, the United Kingdom, Austria is checking in. And you mentioned, who was it that you said was listening from Earlville? Because after the news, we're going to be checking in with some of our friends.
Oh, yes.
From the Route 34 drive-in in Earlville.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. I have so many names in front of me, I couldn't tell you right now, but every time I hit on that, I always think of the Dickey Chick song about Earl, where they kill Earl.
Oh, yeah. And what was the name of that song?
The video is great, too. They
Julian, the Dixie Chicks, and the song where they killed Earl. The bleep.
By the way, Jim is checking in from Richmond. He said he used to live at Peterson and Walcott, which was less than a mile away from Senn High School. My father went to Senn High School, and we have pictures of him playing football wearing a leather helmet.
That's what they used to do.
Yep.
Back in the day. Julian, what'd you find?
Goodbye, Earl.
Goodbye, yes. Earl.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I've been with you too long because I hear things and immediately the song plays in the jukebox of my mind. I'm like, stop. I've got other things in my mind. Stop playing Dixie Chicks now. I'm trying to read.
Well, I've still got Family Affair by Sly going on.
I know. Bonnie Rohr checked in. Thank you, Bonnie. She said, "Goodbye, Earl?" That was it, Bonnie. You're right. Margo and Todd were Clark Griswold's neighbors in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, we got the smartest audience. Zeke from Zenda, Wisconsin checked in. That is just a great combination. Zeke
from
Zenda. I have never heard of Zenda, Wisconsin.
But that makes me think of the terrific book that I'm reading that a friend of ours from Florida is writing with all of the, it's kind of a Dungeons and Dragons thing going on, and Zeke from Zenda would fit into this book.
Right.
And I'm loving it.
Coming up, we're going to talk about going to the drive-in.
Come on, baby, to a drive-in show. I know just the very place to go. I'll be over, pick you up at 8. This will be our very first date. When we're parking in the drive-in show, we'll be sitting in the moonlight row. I bet my penis to a candy bar. You'll be cuter than a movie star. When it's over and we're heading back, we'll stop in for just a little snack. 6 hot dogs ought to be just right after such a wonderful night.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
Eddie
Cochran.
6 hot dogs.
Ought to be just right.
Just right.
After such a wonderful night at the drive-in show.
That's right. Well, it's that time of the year. Time to talk about the drive-in opening up. And last year, we met the owners and operators of the drive-in at Route 34 out in Earlville, Illinois, Paul and Shelley Bottomley. And Paul and Shelley, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Good. So last night was opening night, right?
Yes.
You survived.
We did. It was a little bit slower, but it's been yesterday we kind of got hit with the weather.
Yes. In fact, that's my first question. I was concerned last night because we had a vicious storm that rolled through last night on the north side of Chicago. And I was thinking, well, what happens on a stormy, rainy night when you're planning to open? Do you still open the drive-in?
Rain or shine.
Really?
As long as we have power, we put the show on.
What's the coldest night you've had, or the worst weather conditions you've been open in?
My friend, back when Ron and Charlie Dias ran this place, I've been out here when we had snow, and we've had snow in the spring, and we've had snow in October, the fall, both times.
Sure.
I've been out here and saw icicles on the eaves of the building. It started raining, and it started turning to snow in the spring.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy.
In fact, Paul, I want to talk with you because you've got a great story. You were working and hanging out at the drive-in long before you and Shelley became the owners, right?
I started out here when I think I was 17 years old.
So it got in your blood.
Well, I started at the indoor movie theater, the Majestic in LaSalle. I started as an usher and worked my way to projection.
Mm.
And Charlie Dias, the guy that built this place, needed a projectionist, and I got referred by somebody to come out here, and I just kind of got addicted to it. It's not like the indoor. It's something entirely different.
Oh, sure.
But what was it about the drive-in that made the difference to you? Have you ever been able to pinpoint what the attraction was?
I don't know. I think it's like just the families and the outside. It's a whole different atmosphere. People are out talking and socializing, something you can't really do in the indoor theater and like as far as the concession stand. When I was a projectionist in the indoor, you didn't have any lights on in the booth because you turn the lights on in the projection room, it's going to light down the auditorium
for
talking up there. But people could come and hang out and people would come on to see other projectors running. The doors were always open in those days. People that were on the lot would come in and, you know, watch me change the reels and set stuff up how it's done. When I was in the Majestic in the indoor, I was like the mystery man, like the fan of the opera up the right. balcony where nobody ever saw me, you know.
Well, and one of the big differences between the drive-in and the building is you don't go to a building in your pajamas. You can go to the drive-in in your pajamas,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We actually have people who do.
I'm sure.
They come in or they show up and they change into pajamas while they're here.
Really?
We've had a few.
Okay.
Why do I get the feeling that there is a chapter in a book that you're working on?
The odd things I've seen running a drive-in, right?
Some of those things we can't talk about.
Yeah.
So
I've seen good and I've seen bad. I'll just put it that way.
Okay. What's at the drive-in to open up for the season? What are you playing this weekend?
We're playing The Amateur and Captain America, Brave New World.
Oh, I bet that's huge.
They both look like really good movies. The Amateur looks really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the Captain America movie, the scenes I've been able to see look really, really awesome on that, too. Next weekend, we're going to open that new Thunderbolts, which is another Marvel Studios movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's opening on May 2nd, and we're going to keep Captain America on for the second feature because I think the two Marvel movies fit better together than The Amateur and that one. So
we're
going
to
have Thunderbolts and Captain America.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Now, do you have that kind of say-so when it comes to booking the movies? Or I would imagine you're somewhat beholden to the distributors.
What we have to look at what's available, and Shelley's taken a bigger role on that. Before I was had that burden, and she wanted to get involved, so we're doing it as a team now. But you have to look down the calendar and see what movies from what companies are coming out. We got to look at our drive-in, the crowd we're looking at, the family audience we prefer, and decide. You know, sometimes there's two big ones coming out in the same week, and you can't have them both. and studios usually want a minimum of 2 weeks to give you a movie, so you have to take that into consideration when you set stuff up.
Well, okay, Shelley, looking into the future, what movie is on the horizon that you had to pinch yourself and you said, I'm so glad we got that one, I can't wait to see it?
You know, the problem is I don't get to watch any of them.
Because you're busy.
Because if it's a really good show, we're too busy. Like last year when we had Twisters, we actually invited the crew out and had a family night. So we just showed them, you know, how much we appreciated them. We allowed them to bring their family out. I made burgers and fries and, of course, popcorn. And we just ran the show Twisters because it was like none of us got any time to actually watch it.
Wow.
So it was just, it was a private viewing. So, although this year it seems like an overwhelming response of we need to do that with How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, okay, a great family movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you show a movie twice in one night, or is it once a night? How does that work?
We play the show once a night. Like tonight, we started up. I got rolling with our pre-show and cartoon about 8 o'clock, and we'll play that stuff. I always play a cartoon national anthem, as, of course, goes on the screen first.
Oh, good.
And then we play a couple of little concession bumpers and a preview, and then we always start up with a cartoon. That helps the thing get dark and lets people know, get something going on so people in the concession finish up getting their popcorn or sodas, whatever, know that we're getting close. I don't want to start right into that. And then we have an intermission, you know, with more of the finished concession ads and the 10-minute film act show clock lights in the background of the movie screen. We go to the second feature. When I was younger and first started out the drive, and on Saturday nights they used to do what they call a Saturday night bonus, and we do the first feature, the second feature, and then we would have a third one on Saturday only. And then later on they switched from doing a third feature, that we would play the first feature again. On Saturday nights. And that was like the middle of the summer when school was out, when people didn't have to go to school in the morning or work, and then they that just dissolved away.
But one of my favorites always used to be, as the weather started to get a little cooler, but the drive-in was still open, the Fright Nights, where they would start at sunset. You'd start with a movie, and you'd go all the way till the sun came up the next morning with scary movies.
Yeah. Dusk to Dawn, yes.
Yeah, the Highway 18 in Jefferson, Wisconsin, a friend of mine, Lee Burgess, owns and operated that. And he used to do Dusk to Dawn on Labor Day weekend. On the Labor Day Sunday night, I go up and help him out, so running projection and stuff, and he'd do movies till dawn.
So you go to the drive-in and sleep, you know.
People sleep is amazing. One year I got some pictures on my phone. One year at that Dusk to Dawn showing, and I can't remember what movie is even playing. I'd have to look at the date on the photos. But we started out with 311 cars up there in Jefferson, Wisconsin. In the morning, I think we had 26 people made it all night long.
Oh, gosh.
I served breakfast in the concession stand. His wife would come and make some breakfast.
Oh, that's cool.
Scrambled eggs and stuff. Anybody that made it all night long got free breakfast at the concession stand.
You guys, sit tight. We are talking with Shelley and Paul Bottomley, and they are the owners and operators of the Route 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. We'll come back in just a moment here on WGN.
It's intermission time, folks, so hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right over to our refreshment center for the most extravagant array of refreshment goodies ever assembled under one roof. Enjoy breathtaking, mouth-watering goodies, everything from a snack to a delicious full meal. At our refreshment center, you'll find a large variety of goodies to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, or your sweet tooth. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Visit our refreshment center now. The show starts in 5 minutes.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. And we are talking about drive-ins. Specifically, we're talking about the Route 34 drive-in in Earlville with Shelley and Paul Bottomley, who are the the people that are running the drive-in, having fun, and
working hard.
And I can't wait to read the book that Shelley's going to write. I'm looking forward to all those stories that you can't talk about on the radio.
But let's talk about the food. What's the most popular thing in your concession?
Oh, you know, last year it was actually the chicken strips.
Chicken strips.
Okay. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Of course, popcorn is popular. Do you guys do nachos, too?
Yep. We have nachos. We have hot dogs, chicken strips, chicken sandwiches.
Pizza?
We have pizzas. We have, you know, fries and cheese fries. We have some of the best cheese.
Mm.
It's not cheap.
Well, I hesitate to ask you this, but my mouth is watering when I think about a pickle on a stick. Are you doing pickles on a stick yet?
We don't have the pickles on a stick.
You gotta do the pickle on a stick.
We do have the pickles. We do have the big pickles.
You do have the big pickles?
Yes.
Oh.
We have them on a stick.
So I can bring my own stick and get a big pickle. Okay.
You know what? If you let me know before you come down, I will go get a stick.
Do you know that at Disneyland, a pickle costs you $5?
Oh, I need to raise my prices.
I know you do. Because if you get, you know what? If your mouth starts watering, I'll pay that $5 for a big fat pickle. I know that's crazy, but
Okay, the blatant plug light just started flashing. So if people are not familiar, where is your drive-in located, and what are the hours and days?
We are on what's called Old Route 34 in Earlville, Illinois. And we're open Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. We're open weekends only. Mm-hmm. And we usually open our box office by 7 o'clock, but if we get a line out to the road, we might open slightly earlier. And then we're basically here till the show gets over. It's going to be like 12:30 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about 4 hours and 39 minutes between the two movies and the intermission and the cartoon, and I got rolling about 8 o'clock.
So what's going on right now while you're talking to us?
I'm hoping that people are enjoying Captain America, you know, helping save America and the world, these bad guys out there, jets and stuff like that. But that's what's going on, everything. Back in the day when I ran film, when I was young, you know, every 20 minutes you were changing the film.
Right,
sure.
Right.
Doing the booth. And now I go in there and set the movies up on a computer server on usually by Thursday night and set up a playlist. And I go in there at the beginning of the night at 8 o'clock and turn on the fans and stuff for the cooling for the machine and click the mouse and go push a couple buttons on the sound rack for changing the sound over the movie. And then I just walk away and there's nothing really to do till 12:30.
Wow.
Was that a big deal to change from film to digital?
Yeah, for my friend Ron and I both. I'll always miss the film, and I got one film machine on, like, at least once a year. I've got a reel, a film on it right now, and I'll
Good.
Throw up the film once a year. Maybe on our family appreciation night, we have the kids out, you know, the employee thing where we have them come out and bring their families and watch a show. I'll run, like, a 20-minute reel or a cartoon or something I have off that film just so they can see how it ran in the old days.
My dad was a film projectionist back in the 50s, and it was so fun to watch a movie with him. I can recall every year we would watch the Ten Commandments, and he'd go 3, 2, 1, change. He would look at the cue in the corner, and he just could not get over with the countdown to the, okay, hit it.
Yeah, and there are certain movies like that he played a lot. There's certain movies when you play it a long time, you get to know just by the sound. You wouldn't even have to look at the screen.
Yeah,
I mean, when I started out, like the Star Wars movie, Empire Strikes Back was one of the ones I remember early on when I started doing projection. And I got to know every time about when the reel, every 20-minute reel change was in that, because we ran that for, that was back before, you know, cable TV and DVDs and all this stuff. You had to go to the theater, and we played that like 13 weeks to heavy crowds.
And even now, sometimes if TCM shows a really old movie, you can sometimes still see that cue in the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah.
Well, when I was a teeny tiny baby, the story goes that since I was in a bassinet in the booth between the two projectors, when they took me home to sleep, I couldn't sleep because I didn't have that white noise of the sound of the film.
On that machine, that's the biggest thing you miss if you came out here now and watched in the projection room. That's the biggest thing. It's so quiet. You don't have that sound that everybody knows a movie projector makes. That watched a film when they were in grade school. You know, their distinctive movie projector sound is just gone. There's a couple little fans running in that booth, and it's pretty much quiet.
Wow. All right, listeners want to know, do you have speakers that you can hang on your...
Yes, we do.
You do have speakers.
Yes, the first six rows, I keep speakers on, and because I love walking around the lot before the show and listening to all those little speakers singing together like in a chorus, you know, and making sound. I don't like the idea of being quiet and people roll up the windows on a night like tonight. It would be just dead silent. That would drive me nuts. So we keep speakers in the sixth row. One of the things I did Thursday while Shelley was waiting for food deliveries, I had two poles people had hit last year and knocked out of the ground and broke the wiring, and I was out there, you know, I got to dig the hole down and find the wiring down there, the main wire, and tie into that and splice it. And there's stuff I got to do to insulate that where it has to be tied on underground, but I put two poles back in so everything's good there.
That's pretty terrifying, though, that someone would hit one of the poles. I mean...
Oh, that's a regular basis.
Really?
Really?
Oh, my gosh, I'm thinking you shouldn't be driving if you end up hitting a pole.
And do you
tell you a good one. I'll tell you a good one for her book. The worst one I saw is a girl in a Ford Escort, and this has probably been over 20 years ago, hit one, and then she backed up, and the pole stood up. And it was underneath the hood of her car against, like, the hood top of the hood.
Oh.
And her car's on this pole. How do you get that off of there?
Oh,
wow.
And it was quite a thing because it's in the ground with a cement block in the bottom.
Wow.
You can't lift it up and out the top, and so we had to go out there and unwire that pole and take parts, and then try to get through to pull the car in a way where we could kind of rock it out of the ground and get the car off of that pole.
Do you still have people who drive away and forget to take the speakers out of the windows?
I had like one last year. I'm trying to think what it was. It was like July 16th or something, we had a big windstorm come through here,
mm-hmm.
and we lost power. I'd have to even look at what the movies that were playing, but I think it was like the 16th of July last year, and it tipped over. Like, we could porta potties out here, so we get a real busy night, get the restrooms back up. I have four of those. It tipped those over and blew them like 20 feet down. We lost power for a little while and stuff like that, and somebody drove out when that storm hit, and they ripped up the pole. The speaker loosened the pole, and then they threw it out their window onto the ground. Which I'm glad. 2 years ago, I had somebody do the same thing, and they waited till they got on the highway and threw it out, and my lawnmower guy found it. It had been hit by a truck or something or a car and was in the ditch and was scraped up and messed up pretty bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but the one that was on the ground there, and I had one, I think another one last year, they ripped it loose, but then they dawned on it, and they hung it on the pole with the cord broken.
Ah,
but well, fortunately, they didn't break a window. Sometimes they'll break a window doing that.
Wow. Well, we should tell people they can get answers to all their questions at 34drivein.com. All together, the number 34drivein.com. You guys, let's do this again sometime in the summer and just get caught up on things that are happening out there, the Route 34 Drive-In. It's always so much fun to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, the show must go on. Enjoy the rest of your night tonight. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, kids.
Appreciate it. Shelley and Paul Bottomley are the owners and operators of 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. 34drivein.com.
More coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
It was a mistake. We're paying for it now. We were running in place. We were moving backwards somehow. Nobody's thoughts and nobody's prayers will ever erase the evil we watched. It was a mistake. It was a mistake. The trees engulfed in flames. I shook you awake until you cursed my name. By by the time the sirens arrived, you'd already made your escape, blameless and free. It was a mistake.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. At Steve Dawson. And if you would like to see the video of that song, you should direct your browser to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. That is one of the three videos that we put up from Steve Dawson's last appearance with us. Some wonderful, wonderful songs. He's an extraordinary talent. And
good guitarist, too.
Oh, great guitarist. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's going to be doing, some people have asked if he is still doing any teaching, and he still is. As a matter of fact, he has something that is starting on
the 4th.
Sunday the 4th.
A week from tomorrow.
At 3:30 at the Old Town School of Folk Music. It's a country classic. He's going to be teaching along with Alton Smith, so if you would like to check it out, you can go to oldtownschool.org and look up Steve Dawson, and you can find out information about how he's going to be doing the class and teaching. And
that's 3:30 in the afternoon on Sunday, and as I understand it, they are going to be talking about and sharing classic country music. We're talking, you know, your Porter Wagner, your early country, 50s, 60s. And so that's going to be a great class. It's going to be wonderful. He's really busy, too. In fact, it was just this past week that he and his wife, Diane, were booked to do the Evanston Fest,
which is going to be in, I think it's going to be in September.
September.
And so if you go to our blog, and we really hope you will check out our blog. It's steveandjohnny, S-T-E-V-E-A-N-D-J-O-H-N-N-I-E, .wordpress.com. And we'd love it if you subscribe to the blog. It doesn't cost anything, and we don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we have a new post. For example, you'll probably get an email at some point tomorrow, because we're going to be posting, when we have Patrick Crispin on with us at midnight, we will post Patrick's technology information, because a lot of times when we're talking about it, everybody glazes over. Don't worry about glazing over. It's all written down. It will be posted on our blog. So again, it's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and we really don't spam you. You will just get emails anytime we do a new post. And the subscription is absolutely free. But if you go to our blog right now, the first thing you will see are the videos that we posted from Steve's last appearance with us. And some terrific, terrific songs.
And shout out to producer Slim, also known as Julian.
You did. Yeah, don't mean to embarrass you, but you did a great job on those videos. And for people who don't know, Julian is producing the show, but he also works his magic and sets up, what did you do, about a four-camera shoot with that?
Yeah, I had three on tripods, and then I had one in my hand on a stabilizer gimbal thing.
A gimbal thing.
That's the technical term, the gimbal thing? Okay.
The gimbly gimbal.
And then after that's done, I'm running the audio, and then Julian puts everything together. He matches up the video with the audio, and the result is what you will see.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Beautiful stuff. I love some of the close-ups you did of and it was the second time we'd had Steve in, so I think you...
Actually, that was the third, because we had Steve, then we had Steve and Diane, and then
that's
Steve
right.
by himself again.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do something a little different with this time around.
Yeah, you got those great close-ups of him as he's singing, and he's just, he's got this old-school face. You know, those cheekbones, it looks like, you know, if you put him in the right kind of clothes, he could have walked right out of 1927.
If you're doing a profile on a dating app, would you put old school face?
How would that work?
Better than AI.
That's
yeah,
true.
Really.
Yes.
So who was it that I we saw? Oh, it was on one of the social media sites, and it was a picture of some celebrity, and we both had the same reaction. Oh boy, has that been AI'd?
Oh, that happens a lot. Yeah, filters. You know, just put it through a filter. The thing that freaked me out that I saw, I think it was just this morning, was I can't recall what they called the critter, but they were presenting like it was real.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was a fur alligator.
No.
A really furry alligator. It's like, oh, please, God, don't let that be a real creature, because it was terrifying. I mean, a big furry alligator. And it was crawling up into the back of a pickup truck on the video. It's like, no, no.
No, 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 no.
I've never wanted a gun so bad in my life. Real quick, I'm going to take you back to Steve and Diane. His wife, Diane Christensen, wonderful artist, a singer-songwriter, too. They will be at the Evanston Folk Festival. They were just booked this past week. The Evanston Folk Festival will be September 6th and 7th. And that's a big deal, because I think it was just this past week we heard that a lot of festivals are being canceled because people and groups don't have the money to put a festival together. Yeah. They make their money back, but they've got to have the money to get the thing going.
We're very fortunate in the Chicago area. We have a lot of, certainly the city of Chicago does a lot of festivals, but there's a lot of communities and suburbs that have very well-supported festivals.
Yes. Oh, I'm thinking Ribfest out in Naperville, how big that's always been.
Oh, sure.
Listener from 630 area code said, I saw Steve Dawson last week at Fitzgerald, and it was a wonderful concert. Yeah. And that's one of the shows that he was talking about when he was in studio with us. Just a few minutes ago, we talked with the people who are the owners and operators of the 34 Drive-In. And a listener says, how far west of Oswego is Earlville? And I think it's about 30 miles west, because 34 is Ogden, as we know it. And when you get out to Earlville and that area, you get a lot of cornfields, which I think is a perfect place for a drive-in. But
So what's the distance from Chicago? If you were coming from where we are now in downtown Chicago, if you're going out to...
By the way, it is like 32 miles from Oswego to Earlville. And let's see, from...
It's about 80 miles from here.
80 miles.
If you take, what am I seeing, 55 down to...
79 miles to be exact, from here to the Earlville drive-in.
Yeah.
Yeek.
But that's still not a big deal to me.
Why is it an hour and 26 minutes, though? That seemed wrong.
But see, I think Johnny and I are in the minority
when
it comes to our friends. We think of nothing of going to some far-flung northwest suburb and then going to some place in northwest Indiana or southern Indiana. I mean, it's just part of the drill.
We have friends and we'll say, do you want to come with us? Oh, no. That's like really far.
It's a fun drive.
What? Do you have like a small bladder? Is that your problem?
That reminds me. We have a potential future trip to Indianapolis in our future to check out a guitar that I had been looking at.
I thought you were going to say the Indy 500. No.
It was a guitar that I'd been looking at while we were in Florida, and it particularly unique because it had been customized and autographed, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of it. But I was going to bid on it then, or I was going to buy it then, and we just decided, let's wait till we get back to Chicago, and if it is still there, then it was meant to be, and
right.
We may take a fun little trip down to Indianapolis.
Well, I think you kind of need to see something that's quirky. I mean, it's different.
And it has some interesting, some customized controls that the people I was talking to on the phone couldn't tell me what it did and how they worked.
But as I've always said to you, when it comes to guitars, I will never, ever understand why you don't get a book with your guitar that tells you what it does.
And the closest I've seen...
A manual, come on.
I know some others may have some of this. Actually, I think Gretsch, I believe Ibanez, and I'm sure some of the others must have what amounts to, on their website, manuals you can download
on the website,
that tell
yeah.
you how some of this, because some of the controls are a little different.
Yeah.
And then there are some guitars, and there's one that I've wanted for a long time that is on my future wish list. It's a Les Paul recording guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a guitar that Les used. It was his personal guitar. He designed it. It had low impedance pickups, and he had a special, it was like a control panel built into the guitar where he could control phasing and all kinds of unusual effects that he would get.
Now, you know, you need...
Oh, you got to have a... You got to have a manual
user's,
and
a user's guide,
and probably a live-in mechanic to go along with that too, because it was complex. That's one of the reasons that it didn't sell as well as I think it should have, mm-hmm. because it was
intimidating.
Yeah, to a lot of people, very intimidating.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it was intimidating. We'll take a break. We'll come right back here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's Duane Eddy, and throughout the show we're playing a few things by Duane. April 26, 1938 was Duane's birthday, and that was one of those songs that back in the day used to do that. Hello.
Sorry.
It was called 3:30 Blues, and the story behind that was that Duane was booked, this would have been back roughly late 50s, Duane was booked to play the Apollo Theater, one of the legendary black music venues in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came out, he wasn't sure how the audience was going to react, and so he put together... He turned to the guys in the band and said, let's do some blues. And that's how he wrote what he called 3:30 Blues.
That's a good song.
And by the end of the song, the crowd was on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And the first time we saw Duane, he did that. In fact, the first time we had been interviewing Duane, I forget how we first got put in touch with him.
Probably through Keith Bilbrey.
It might have been Keith Bilbrey from... WSM for many, many mm-hmm. years. And I believe it was when Duane came out with his, was it the Duane thing?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Twang thing box set. And we had him on the show. And we wound up interviewing him several times. And then it was, I think, 86 that... We went down to Nashville.
For his
it was the,
60th birthday?
No, it was the introduction of the Duane Eddy Gretsch guitar.
That's right.
So we were down, and there was like a celebratory party.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think it was coinciding with the NAMM show in Nashville. And that's when we first met Dwayne and the first time we ever heard him play live. Mm. And it was just wonderful. And one of the cool things about Dwayne Eddy, and yeah, I'm a Dwayne Eddy geek, I admit it. When you saw Dwayne on stage, you didn't get a slick performance. He would, after each song, he would talk a little bit about the next song that was coming up. But you got the sound that was mm-hmm. on the records. And Dwayne was one of the first of the 50s performers to be able to replicate that recorded sound live.
Well, he was adamant about that. When it came to his horn player, he mm-hmm. wanted the horn player to know every note the way it was on the record. You know, no improvising, because you came to hear the song the way
right.
you knew it.
He respected his
yeah.
audience.
And that was pretty amazing, too, because I guess there was a time when he was having a hard time finding the right horn players.
Yeah.
And when he did, it was magic. It was so cool.
And there was a... Did we talk about this? No, I think we talked about this off the air. That Dwayne was almost a member of the Traveling Wilburys.
Oh, that's right. We were listening to the Wilburys the other night because it was Roy Orbison's birthday.
Yes.
And I did not know that story because he was so close with George Harrison that it seemed like it would be a natural for him to be a part of the Wilburys, but he wasn't.
What I heard was that George had actually contacted Dwayne mm-hmm. and told him that George and Bob Dylan and
Tom Petty
and Roy Orbison and Jeff Lynne were getting together, and would Dwayne want to be a part of this? And Dwayne said, sure, but he had some conflicting... I think he was over in Europe during one of his British tours.
One of, in my opinion, the best, if not the best, supergroups of all time.
Yeah.
Listening to them the other night, I was just like, dang, one song after the other.
Julian, are you hip to the Traveling Wilburys?
No, but I will. That is my homework.
Oh, do.
Okay. Look up, we got a second before we go to news. Tell me what you can find by the Traveling Wilburys.
W-I-L-B-U-R-Y-S.
Yeah.
Traveling Wilburys. Because what I love about it is, yes, Orbison, he just shines through. I mean, that mm-hmm. voice is amazing. But so does Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were all so good.
I got one if you're ready. You want to guess what it is? Want to play it?
Sure. Go for it.
Okay.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can. Well, it's all right, as long as you lend a hand. You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring.
It's Tom Petty.
Waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all right,
Jeff Lynne.
Even if they say you're wrong, well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong. Well, it's all right, as long as you got somewhere to lay. Well, it's all right. Every day is judgment day.
Maybe somewhere down the road away, you'll think of me and wonder where I am these days. Maybe somewhere down the road when somebody plays purple haze.
Well, it's all right,
Roy Orbison.
Even when push comes to shove, well, it's all right. If you got someone to love, well, it's all right. Everything will work out fine.
ashamed of the car I drive.
Ashamed of the life.
I'm just glad to be here, happy to feel that.
I hate to do it, but we're going to have to drop out of this.
Oh, so good.
But that's your assignment for this week. Listen to every Traveling Wilburys song ever recorded. You will not find a bad one. They only did two albums. That was the all-time best supergroup ever.
I knew Petty was in a supergroup, but wow.
Yeah, and that was a good choice too, Julian. Excellent choice, in fact. Coming up, we're going to talk tech with Dr. Patrick Crispin, so stay with us.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care, and I'm just a devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas, viva Las Vegas.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yes, boys and girls, it's time for us to once again talk technology with Elvis Crispin.
Thank you very much.
That would be Dr. Elvis Crispin. Dr. Patrick Woo-hoo! Crispin joins us from Las Vegas, Nevada. So, what was the day like for you guys? You went to the Coke Museum, which made your wife so very happy.
I cracked up at Christine's message. Christine sent this message saying that she was going to the mothership.
It was calling her home.
Well, Christine's favorite soft drink, as you know, is Coca-Cola. And
No. Will... That does not do it justice.
No.
The
no.
woman is obsessed.
Let's just say that... Giordano's sells Pepsi.
Yes.
And Christine has actually snuck in Coca-Cola into Giordano's because it's like, no, I'm sorry, I need my Coca-Cola. So we go to the Coke store over on Las Vegas Boulevard, and they have up sort of on the second floor a soda fountain where you can have sodas from around the world. You kind of have 16, I think 14 different sodas. So it's not like 14 different types of Cokes, but it's like more like 14 different types of Fantas and things like that.
Huh.
And Joseph and I had gone there yesterday and had both a great and terrible time and decided that we needed to make sure that Christine went today. And also had a great and terrible time because some of the stuff in there is actually really good. I mean, there's like ginger beer from Tanzania, which was really, really good. Strawberry Fanta from Panama. Something I think Johnny would appreciate, Sprite Cucumber.
Ooh.
A cucumber-flavored Sprite from Slovenia, which was really good.
Yeah.
It was really good. It tasted like cucumber. Joseph went to town on Fanta Pineapple from Greece.
Mm.
And, of course, we all tried Beverly. If anybody's been to one of the Coke stores that sells Beverly.
What is Beverly?
I'll read what they say, and I'll give you our description. Introduced in Italy in 1969, Beverly is a non-alcoholic aperitif that is typically consumed before meals because of its distinctive taste. It is one of our most popular must-try drinks.
What?
Both Joseph and I unanimously agree that Beverly is, in fact, a war crime. It is take all the sadness in the world and make it a soda. It is Malort soda.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's the non-alcoholic version of Malort.
It really is. It's just terrible. And of course, you know, we had to have Christine take a swig of that.
Oh,
and,
yes. The loving husband that you are. Honey, we want to take
you.
She's
not very happy. And then the other thing we did today is, of course, because the airport is right next door, and they have amazing viewing place, went out and, of course, watched airplanes take off and land because, you know, we've got an a 9-year-old with us who loves airplanes. So fun.
I have to ask, since you're in Vegas, we have been watching the White Sox play the formerly Oakland Athletics, and they are moving to Las Vegas. Have you seen anything resembling construction of a stadium? Because the rumors we're hearing, being Las Vegas to play baseball, they're going to have a dome stadium, and that's what we hear they're going to be constructing. Have you seen anything?
We have not seen construction. We have seen destruction. The Tropicana is gone.
Oh.
They have blown up the Tropicana, and it's now a giant pile of concrete that at that corner, Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard, is where they're going to build the stadium. And word is they're going to start construction really soon. I saw something earlier today that they've hired the person who is going to be sort of the lead of the project. It's the same person who did the Allegiant Stadium on the other side of the highway. So I see that they're saying games are going to be played here in 2028.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I think they can do it because Vegas is really good at building big things.
Well, they've got the weather in their favor, too.
It never rains.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we've enjoyed watching the Sox playing in Sacramento?
Yeah.
Is that where they're playing, Patrick? At the minor league field, which is just beautiful because it's just small.
It's a really nice old-fashioned baseball field. I think it is Sacramento.
And in fact,
isn't Sacramento the capital of California? Whatever the capital of California is, that's where they're playing.
That is the capital of California.
And Steve said, so when we're out in Pasadena visiting the kids, maybe we can run up to the field. And I said, Steve, it's 5 hours away.
Yeah.
We're not going to be running up.
That's not going to happen.
It's a very long drive. Yeah, just to see a baseball field. I don't think so. We got so much to talk about. We're going to take a break.
We need a break, Patrick.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm back on cucumber Sprite. Seriously, that's on my mind.
Really?
I'm thinking that's so refreshing.
Christine went to town on it. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think the new drink that Popeyes is selling. Have you heard about this?
No.
Pickle lemonade. You can get pickle lemonade just iced, or you can get it frosty. I'm like, yes!
Why is my tongue going...
I know!
Right now, just at the name. Pickle lemonade.
It sounds perfect. Oh,
my. I think I saw them at Coachella.
Did you? All right. On that thought... You hang loose or sit tight. We'll come right back, and we're going to talk, start everything off. If you have a Nest thermostat, be listening.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, hang on to every word. Yep. We'll come right back here on WGN.
I got a mouse I play with every day. He runs across the map and his tail is long and gray. He doesn't like cheese, he likes playing games. He's not afraid of cats, he hasn't got a name. He's my computer mouse. He's my double click, single click, run around the map. Computer mouse.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Patrick, you may wonder why we are playing the computer mouse song.
I am.
Because you're thinking, why would you pay that piece of dreck? Really? This is the anniversary of the unveiling of the computer mouse to the masses 60 years ago. 60 years.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It was wood on two wheels. A chunk of wood.
60 years ago just sounds...
crazy.
Was that really?
What were they using it?
At the mother of all demos, it was at the Stanford Research Institute, SRI. Do a Google search for Stanford mother of all demos. And Douglas Engelbert did this. I'm doing this from memory, so if I get it wrong, we'll just pretend I'm making this up. But Douglas Engelbert kind of demonstrated 1968 was a demo of what was going to become the future of computers. He had a graphic user interface. He had a wooden mouse that had been around for a while. And it was the first time that anybody put anything together. And it's a really good look from 1968 of what we now know as a computer, and it predicted a lot of things that we have.
I'm looking at a picture of the mouse, the first mouse that he unveiled, that chunk of wood.
That little, and there's a little chip missing from it.
Oh, that's wild. You're right. And it's got wheels under it. That it's like, well, God bless him, because I don't even know how one's mind works that way, how you wake up one day and say, we should have this external device that allows us to use this thing that's in front of us that eventually everybody's going to be using. And he was right. So
this Engelbert guy must have been the Sheldon of his time.
Easily, yes. Okay, I said before we took a break that if you have a Nest thermostat, you must listen carefully and closely. Why, Patrick?
If you are running the first or second generation Nest Learning thermostat, these were released back in 2011 or 2012, Google has basically just announced this week, we no longer are going to support them come October. So your smart thermostats that you spend all that money on, go back to being old-fashioned, dumb thermostats.
Wow.
You will no longer be able to control them remotely, so you will not be able to go open up the Nest app or the Google Home app and change your temperature remotely. And you're no longer going to get any updates over the internet. It basically goes back to a dumb thermostat sitting on the wall. If you want to change your temperature, you've got to get up off of the couch and go to the thermostat and change the temperature. Why are they doing this? Well, Nest actually introduced these back again in 2011, 2012. And Google bought Nest, I think it was like $3.2 billion, and that was back in 2014. And Google's kind of saying, you know what, we just don't want to support these anymore. Now, if you have the third or fourth generation Nest thermostat, you don't have anything to worry about. Those keep working. But if you have the old Nest learning thermostats that came when Nest was still not Google,
right?
Those are going to stop working. So it's only affecting first and second generation, third or fourth generation. You're going to continue to get updates. You'll continue to be able to use the Nest app or Google Home to push your updates. What do you do? I mean, if you've got a first or second generation, and I think I've got two thermostats in my house. One of them is a generation 3. One of them, I think, is a generation 1.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I know somebody who sent me a third generation, which I'll be putting on the wall soon. So thank you for that. One of your old ones. Google is going to offer you, if you have a first or second generation, and Google knows because you've logged in to the Nest app or the Google Home app, they'll send you an email shortly. They're going to offer you $130 off a new fourth generation thermostat. Those are about $280. So you're going to get you'll need to spend $150 to do the update if you want to do that. Not full price, but you're going to get a pretty good discount. The other thing you can think about is, you can kind of take this as, I'm really upset right now at Google that they're doing this to me. And I'm going to do this back to Google. Guess what, Google? You're fired, and I'm going to go to one of the competitors. And I know that you guys recently jumped from Google Nest
to Ecobee.
Yep.
And we love it. And one of the reasons that we jumped from Google Nest was that we started having some connectivity problems. There was a nationwide outage. And we couldn't access, couldn't control it.
I went to the site that you always talk about, Patrick, over the years, Download Detector. And I would say, wait, Down Detector says that nationwide, oh, wait a minute, it's all around the world people are having problems. And we would be out of town, and I would say, wait.
We were in Florida at one point.
Yeah.
We were trying to make sure that things would be okay in Chicago.
It was freezing cold in Chicago, and I thought, is the heat even on? It just got to be too stressful.
So we
and that's
wound
one
up,
of the best things about these, is that you can be somewhere in the world, and you can now open up your phone and say, okay, did I leave my heat on? Mm-hmm. Right. Did I turn it on, or can I turn it on? Or it's really hot outside, can I turn the air conditioning on before I get home? You can do that on your phone with these smart thermostats, but not if you have a first or second generation one after October 25th. So,
okay, a couple things. One, just we would recommend Ecobee. We got it. We fired Google, fired Nest, went with Ecobee. We've been very happy with it. But number two, how does somebody know if they have a first or second generation?
And it's a popular question, and the folks at Google actually have a page that shows you, here's what it looks like, here's what each of the different versions looks like. And they say if you have a big screen, it's a version 3 or 4, or small screen, but too many, I mean, you don't know what it is. Easiest way to do it, in the Nest app, find your thermostat, click on settings, click on technical information. And when you look at the display model, the first digit of the display model, if it's one or two, that's a first or a second generation. If you have a Google Home app, you can then basically open your thermostat settings, look on device information, it'll tell you the model. I'm going to put this in the show notes so you don't have to write any of these down, but there's really a simple way to do it through either Google Home or Nest. You can actually do it.
And again, show notes will be on our blog probably at some point late Sunday.
And one of the things I do with my show notes is I'll spend a couple days writing them up. And before I'm done with them, I'll kind of copy and paste my show notes into ChatGPT and say, okay, check this out. Does this make sense? So I'm still doing the work, and that's actually the way you use ChatGPT really well, is don't have it write things for you, but have it sort of as an editor for you. And I said, okay, what else am I forgetting or not doing? And one of the things that ChatGPT came up with that I didn't, and I thought it was a brilliant insight, was if you have a first or second generation Nest thermostat in your house and you're thinking of selling your home, you might have a problem selling your home, because this is going to be your smart thermostat's no longer a smart thermostat. Uh-huh. And the buyers might sit there and say, we need you to discount the price of the home. Mm-hmm. So if you have a first or second generation, it might be time for you to think about getting rid of it, especially if you're going to be selling your home. Really smart idea.
Only other thing that you could have is what we have in Florida.
Oh, please.
And I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't remember the manufacturer.
I'm the one sitting here shaking my head because I say, honey, I'm hot. Make it cool in here as I stand in front of the darn thing.
But the point is, this is a thermostat that we got when we initially had the furnace and air conditioning system put in. And this is as simple as, okay, we're leaving. We don't want bad things to happen. I set it to don't let the house get colder than 66. Don't let the house get warmer than 76. Period. End of story. No Wi-Fi involved. Nobody can hack into it. Nobody can do nothing. We walk in. The house is comfortable. Thank you very much.
The only thing that makes me feel better about the darn thing is every time we've had an HVAC guy at the house, they've always said to you, sir, can you do the thermostat? Because I don't know how to do this.
I crack up at this because
every time
this is the HVAC guys who have the latest technology, and they're looking at me like,
I don't know.
It's wonderful old school that does just what I need it to do.
And that's how I look at it every time. I'm hot. Make it cool. It doesn't work. And Patrick, I want to say, you said that Google will be sending out letters to people who are eligible for this $130 rebate or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yes, whatever account you log in with as.
I predict that by the time you join us in a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about the
scam.
Bad actors
yep.
who've come up with a way to send out letters and hoping that somebody out there has a Google Nest and is going to give them their credit card
because
number.
Because now, this is in fact something that Google will be sending. Because we always say, worry if you get emails from people.
Don't buy it. Yeah. Now all of a sudden you get this email and you're like, well, I do. I have a Nest. Oh, well, good. Let me get my $130. And, mark my words, 2 weeks, you're going to be talking about that on the radio.
Yeah, we just talked with Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. I bet that's going to be one of our conversations.
One of the scams.
Okay, I will just give you a clue. If they ask you for your account number, they should already have this account number if they are sending you the information. So
they're going to give you your credit and have you go to Google.com or actually maybe even go to Best Buy and just buy it.
Yeah.
You can buy this for $2.79 at Best Buy or at Target or at Walmart.
That's the way to do it. All right, Patrick, we're going to take a break. Then we'll come right back talking tech with Patrick Crispin here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking technology with Dr. Patrick Crispin. He is the Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. And just before we broke, we were talking about Google saying, you're not going to be using that that Nest so much anymore.
The old Nest.
The old Nest.
So let's – the old Nest.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else want to say
version one and version two?
1, 2, 3. The old Nest.
I was answering text about that during the news. So,
but let's stay with Google for a while, for a few moments, because there's some questions about Google Chrome's future, Patrick.
This is kind of interesting. We've been talking about this a couple times over the last couple years. There's a big antitrust case that's going on against Google, and it hasn't been going well for Google. A judge has already ruled that Google illegally maintained a monopoly over online search by, in effect, giving exclusive deals, like paying Apple billions and billions and billions of dollars to be the default search engine on iPhone. So the lawsuit has been kind of gotten to the point where it's like, no, Google's guilty of this. There's no question about it. Now we're at the stage of the court having to figure out, okay, Google's monopoly, what do we do? How do we fix this? Justice Department is actually pushing for really big changes. Their recommendation includes forcing Google to sell Chrome, to say Google will no longer sell Chrome or give it away, but actually sell it to another company. And that's huge because if you think about it, maybe two out of every three people using a web browser right now are using Chrome. It's the number one web browser by far. Next one after that is Safari, which is 17%. Edge has 5%. And Firefox, I'm a Firefox user, only 2%. So
Sorry
about that. So, okay, if Chrome does get sold, who's going to buy it? Because, the price tag for this thing is not cheap. I would hate to say this. Even if the three of us pulled our money, we're probably going to be a few dollars short of the $50 to $100 billion price tag for this.
Billion. So.
That's billion with a B.
Whoa.
That's a billion with a B. So the court's been basically kind of hearing from the Department of Justice this week saying, we need to break it up. And there are some companies on the sidelines going, we're interested. OpenAI, which has a lot of money, is actually saying, if Chrome was on the market, we'd buy it and kind of build ChatGPT into it. This is actually really, really fascinating. If you know anything about OpenAI, they are married at the hip to Microsoft.
Which gives us Bing, right?
And the fact that they're saying, Bing isn't very good.
Oh.
I think we want to go with Chrome. It's like, okay.
Sorry, Bing.
Sorry, Bing. The other companies that have stepped up, Perplexity, and then surprisingly, the fat kid.
Pause. Perplexity. What the heck is Perplexity?
If I recall, there's an AI. They're an AI company, a smaller AI company. And then the other one that's even more curious, Yahoo. Yahoo, which has not been relevant in a long time. Yahoo is saying that they want to buy it. I don't think that's going to happen. And Yandex, which is a Chinese company, if I believe. Google's basically saying, you can't make us sell this. I mean, it is such a big part of our DNA. It's so closely tied to what we're doing. This is just not going to work. And if you make us sell it, it's actually going to hurt the consumers.
Why can't they just stop doing what they're told is wrong?
They can, but the reality is that if you think about that, one of the ways that Google gets away with being the monopoly with the browser is they pay for the development for the Mozilla Foundation. Oh. Billions and billions of dollars for Mozilla. So if you are using Firefox,
mm-hmm.
Firefox is being funded by Google, which Google could be forced to not pay for anymore. And then Apple is making billions or tens of billions of dollars sure. from Google. And it's not like they need it, but, you know, that's money that they might have to recover someplace else. So just be aware of that. DOJ is asking for a whole bunch of things besides selling Chrome. They're thinking about having Google from paying any companies like Apple to make it the default search engine, or Samsung for the department search placement, or to prevent them from letting Motorola sign the deal with some other competitor. They're also talking about requiring Google to share their secret sauce and how they do search, a whole bunch of things.
Hmm.
Google obviously is saying, yeah, no, this is wrong. This is terrible. This is basically a remedies trial right now. This is going to last several weeks. We'll get a judgment by later this year, early 2026. I wrote 2025 on our note. Sorry about that. The thing is, Google's already said, we're appealing. I don't care what they say.
So sure.
This isn't going to come for a long time. But just be aware, Google's getting a lot of headwind right now because they're a monopoly. And this could be the next big thing. Since the Microsoft case, where Microsoft was forced to kind of break things up, especially with Internet Explorer, and it's had a lasting impact.
Interesting, because a listener just texted and said, Patrick, is ChromeGate similar to what happened with Microsoft and Internet Explorer?
Very similar. It's basically what that happened in the 90s, where Microsoft really was a major monopoly, forcing everybody into using Internet Explorer, and then eventually they were forced to sell a lot of their products and give things away, and they get penalized. This is the next generation of that same sort of line of thinking, where this company has just gotten too big. Google says, we've gotten too big because we've innovated, mm-hmm. and nobody else can keep up with us. But if you look behind the scenes, they're doing some things that are like, mm-hmm. you're trying to compete against your bad guys, or you're trying to keep the small guys down, and you can't do that.
This is kind of the classic example of, you talk about a tangled web. Boy, yeah. Here we have a tangled web. And like you, Firefox is my default browser. And you talk about the Mozilla Foundation. One of the other things that I still use is Thunderbird, which
yeah.
is the Mozilla Foundation's email program. And it's really, really good. But again, some of the money that's...
It's coming from Google.
And Google is
doing it because they want to say, see, we're helping competitors. But
But I bet if you went out on the street and you surveyed people and you used the word monopoly, I bet you 99% of the people would say, Google's got to be broken up. I mean, they're a monopoly and all, because that just makes it sound like they're the bad guys. They're the big bad guys. But when you really break it down, there's a whole lot of good that comes from what they're doing. And why were they allowed to get this far into the game as the monopoly?
And I don't want to get political here, but I will ask a question, and I don't know that any of us have the answer. There's a lot of unusual things going on in Washington right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised if some of those unusual things prolong this scenario even longer.
Well, remember, this started back under Lena Khan's watch during the Biden administration, mm-hmm. and has continued under the Trump administration, because it turns out both sides are kind of realizing, you know what, monopolies are bad. And the new administration kind of realizes, you know, Google hasn't been very nice to conservatives. Maybe we can find a way to kind of nudge them in one direction.
So there's, along with this tangled web, there is the tangled web of the reality of politics at the moment.
And pretty much. So we've got the law and politics intermingling.
Before we move on from the subject, our listener says, what about Chromebook? How does this affect Chromebook?
It doesn't. That's the nice thing about Chromebook is it's got the Chrome operating system, but that's not what they're talking about selling here or divesting. Mm-hmm. It's talking about, in effect, the Chrome operating system. Although there is talk about making Google get rid of Android as well, not to stop it, but to sell Android to somebody else. Hmm. And then it's a hop, skip, and jump from Android to selling the Chrome OS as well. But we're talking about basically the Chrome browser as being the focus, I think, is where you're going to be mm-hmm. doing.
And the how Chrome many other browsers like, are based on the Chrome browsing system?
So many are based on Chromium. It's not even funny. All the biggies.
Wow.
The subject now turns to Facebook.
It ain't what it used to be, right, Patrick?
I think a lot of people are saying it. It's like, you know, I miss the old Facebook because what I'm getting right now on Facebook, this just isn't working. Mm-mm. It's garbage.
And I can't tell you how many times during the past week I will be going through my Facebook feed and I have to stop and say, I don't want to see this stuff, and I have to manually go and say, okay, let me look at what my friends are doing to get rid of some of the crud that they're throwing at me.
And they actually did add a new My Friends tab so you can see just only your friends. Mm-hmm. So that's a neat thing. But one of the big things is there's something that goes on Facebook, and it's not just Facebook, it's all social media, which is called engagement farming. And the way it works is if I'm a spammer or I'm a shady account, I can then post some low-quality, sort of emotionally manipulated content. Things like, hey, name a city without the letter A in it, only 1% can solve this riddle. And these posts take no effort to write, but they're designed to trick you into liking, sharing, commenting on it, not because the content's any good, but it's there because you're engaging with it ends up making them more money. The more eyeballs that you put on their posts, the better, because they're going to actually kind of boost their visibility in the Facebook algorithm. And if they're more visible, then they get more followers, they get more clicks, and more revenue. So there are bad guy actors out there who look at this and say, my golly, I can post the worst garbage ever and mm-hmm. make lots of money with it. Why wouldn't I? And the answer is because eventually the folks at Meta finally wake up and say, yeah, we're not going to let you do that anymore. So this week, Meta announced new measures to crack down on it. If you are a page or an account and you post this spammy content, you know, you won't believe there are 7 secrets. You won't believe number 6. You're going to have limited reach, and it's only going to go to the people who are deliberately following you. So your junk isn't going to go into other people's feeds, which is actually a really good thing. You're also going to lose the ability to make money off of those posts, which is yay. Hopefully that reduces the incentive for these bad actors to post bad garbage. They're also going after the spam networks out there, the people who are making fake accounts or cloned accounts and trying to push out as much garbage as possible through multiple channels. And I posted a link to the announcement from Facebook. So just be aware, Facebook really is aware that it blows. and the folks at Meta are realizing, we need to fix this pretty quick or people are just going to stop using it and come back. So if you still use Facebook and are getting frustrated by the garbage on it, Facebook is going to hopefully start cracking down on some of the spammers and the fake engagement posts, and you'll start getting more posts from your friends.
Sadly, with this crackdown, not a week goes by that someone we know that is legitimately using Facebook
yep.
to advertise their gigs or mm-hmm. whatever it is that they want to share with their literally thousands and thousands of followers, and they get shut down. And they've got no one they can talk to, no yep. one that they can right. beg. Sydney Friedman, the mentalist, musical mentalist, he was one that he was shut down. And basically Facebook said, you don't exist. This is all spam. Mm-hmm. And this is how he got word out about his shows and communicated with people who wanted to know about how they could book him. And musicians have experienced that. And
there have been several musicians that have had to start other Facebook pages to try yeah. to stay in touch with the people that follow them.
So it gets so worse because the scammers are actually, what they're doing is, and we'll give you a made-up example here. Let's say that I know that there's a Steve and Johnny Show Facebook page. I could go and create my The Real Steve and Johnny Facebook page, yeah. which is fake, with a whole bunch of garbage, and then report the Steve yeah. and Johnny Facebook yep. page and have it taken down.
Yeah.
And the scammer is then taking the users and followers and everything else from the real people.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Facebook is going to start cracking down on this, fingers crossed, but Facebook makes lots of promises. Let's see if they deliver.
Are you hearing that Instagram is doing a similar kind of crackdown? And I mention that because I follow this young man. He's 10 years old. He's a fashion designer. He has 4 million followers. This is amazing because we've been watching him since he was 5 years old as a fashion designer. And he was shut down last week. Uh-huh. Closed down. Yeah, you don't even exist. We don't need you anymore. Oh, what? And thankfully, all of these followers found out about it because his mom took that information to another social media mm-hmm. page and said, you've got to help us. And that's what brought him back onto Instagram.
And Patrick, aren't a lot of isn't a lot of this happening to what we would call legacy accounts that have been around for a while, so they have yeah. a lot of followers. And I'm thinking specifically of a friend of ours who had her Facebook page taken over by someone, and
she'd been there at the beginning,
yeah,
posting all her pictures of her family and her trips to Disney,
and now she can't get back some pictures that that she wants because this
she was shut down. And then she actually opened up another page, and they put two and two together, and they shut her down on that page too.
And well, we've talked on the air about my dad's Facebook page. I tried yeah. to turn it into a legacy page.
Yep.
My dad died, and I contacted Facebook and said, can we turn this page off or turn it into a legacy account? They said, sure. What you need to see is death certificate. My dad's name is Bob Crispin. His death certificate says Robert Crispin.
You're right.
And he said, no, I'm sorry. He signed up as Bob Crispin. So unless his death certificate said Bob Crispin,
yeah.
we can't. And it's like, you really can't be so stupid, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. A listener at 815 says most of my friends have left Facebook and gone to yeah. TikTok, which leads us to the future of TikTok, because that's been extended too, hasn't it?
Until June 19th. So the idea was that TikTok had to be divested and sold to an American buyer. So ByteDance is kind of in the talks with a couple different companies. Unlike with Chrome, because the announcement for Chrome is still kind of new, with TikTok, everybody is signing up for this thing. Potential buyers have shown up, including Oracle, Amazon, Andreessen Horowitz, and Blackstone. If you don't know about Andreessen Horowitz, they're a venture capital firm that Marc Andreessen founded Netscape and then went on and made billions of dollars, mm-hmm. Being an angel investor in everything. And Blackstone is one of the venture capital firms out there, a big one. Frank McCourt's Project Liberty Consortium and Walmart, maybe?
Hmm.
The thing is, we don't know if ByteDance is going to be willing to sell TikTok. And this whole thing about you know, giving until June 19th to sell it, there's nothing in law that actually allows this law to be postponed being enforced. The law said it should have gone back in effect on January 19th, but...
So we're already on shaky ground.
We live in a world where the Department of Justice said, yeah, we know what the law says, but we're going to be going in a different direction.
Yes.
Yeah. we've only got a couple minutes, but a very quick thing on the from the category of This Week in Hacks.
A weird one.
Yeah, if you are Hertz Dollar Thrifty rental car customers, your data may have been breached. This happened between October and December of last year. And data included in the breach includes name, contact information, date of birth, credit card information, driver's license information, and if you had worked for the companies, any workers' compensation claims. Small Number actually had their Social Security numbers leaked as well.
Oh, jeez.
Hertz is saying that they are not aware of any sort of use of this information, but we know it's out there. You are able to, and you can contact Hertz, or I'll put a link in the show notes. They've hired a company called Kroll, K-R-O-L-L, and you can do 2 years of identity monitoring and dark web monitoring services for free. This is one of those few ones where I actually did sign up for it, so I'll check it out. Just be aware that Hertz Dollar Thrifty Car customer, your data might be out there. And if you get any emails from Hertz Dollar or Thrifty in the future, you got to be careful because your data is out there, and it could be a fake person contacting you.
Hmm. I bet you're going to get a piece of snail mail about that if you were a user.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your stay in Las Vegas and hug the boy for us and be good. And
by the way, I love the picture of Joseph by the Coke sign.
Yes.
That was such a...
You're having a lot of fun and enjoy it.
You're having a great time.
And if you need bail money, don't call us.
Hey, I'm proud to say I have won 70 cents on this trip.
70 cents.
I won't tell you how much it cost me to get that 70 cents.
Okay.
Take care, Patrick. Talk to you soon.
See you guys later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care, and I'm just a devil with love to spare. So viva Las Vegas, viva Las Vegas.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yes, boys and girls, it's time for us to once again talk technology with Elvis Crispin.
Thank you very much.
That would be Dr. Elvis Crispin. Dr. Patrick Woo-hoo! Crispin joins us from Las Vegas, Nevada. So, what was the day like for you guys? You went to the Coke Museum, which made your wife so very happy.
I cracked up at Christine's message. Christine sent this message saying that she was going to the mothership.
It was calling her home.
Well, Christine's favorite soft drink, as you know, is Coca-Cola. And
no. Will... That does not do it justice.
No.
The
no.
woman is obsessed.
She. Let's just say that... Giordano's sells Pepsi.
Yes.
And Christine has actually snuck in Coca-Cola into Giordano's because it's like, no, I'm sorry, I need my Coca-Cola. So we go to the Coke store over on Las Vegas Boulevard, and they have up sort of on the second floor a soda fountain where you can have sodas from around the world. You kind of have 16, I think 14 different sodas. So it's not like 14 different types of Cokes, but it's like more like 14 different types of Fantas and things like that.
Huh.
And Joseph and I had gone there yesterday and had both a great and terrible time and decided that we needed to make sure that Christine went today. And also had a great and terrible time because some of the stuff in there is actually really good. I mean, there's like this ginger beer from Tanzania, which was really, really good. Strawberry Fanta from Panama. Something I think Johnny would appreciate, Sprite Cucumber.
Ooh.
A cucumber-flavored Sprite from Slovenia, which was really good.
Yeah.
It was really good. It tasted like cucumber. Joseph went to town on Fanta Pineapple from Greece.
Mm.
And, of course, we all tried Beverly. If anybody's been to one of the Coke stores that sells Beverly.
What is Beverly?
I'll read what they say, and I'll give you our description. Introduced in Italy in 1969, Beverly is a non-alcoholic aperitif that is typically consumed before meals. Because of its distinctive taste, it is one of our most popular must-try drinks.
What?
Both Joseph and I unanimously agree that Beverly is, in fact, a war crime. It is... Take all the sadness in the world and make it a soda. It is Malort soda.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's the non-alcoholic version of Malort.
It really is.
Wow.
It's just terrible. And of course, you know, we had to have Christine take a swig of that.
Oh,
and,
yes. The loving husband that you are. Honey, we want to take
you.
She's
not very happy. And then the other thing we did today is, of course, because the airport is right next door, and they have an amazing viewing place, went out and, of course, watched airplanes take off and land because, you know, we've got a 9-year-old with us who loves airplanes. So
I have
a bunch of fun.
I have to ask, since you're in Vegas, we have been watching the White Sox play the formerly Oakland Athletics, and they are moving to Las Vegas. Have you seen anything resembling construction of a stadium? Because the rumors we're hearing, being Las Vegas to play baseball, they're going to have a dome stadium, and that's what we hear they're going to be constructing. Have you seen anything?
We have not seen construction. We have seen destruction. The Tropicana is gone.
Oh.
They have blown up the Tropicana, and it's now a giant pile of concrete that at that corner, Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard, is where they're going to build the stadium. And word is they're going to start construction really soon. I saw something earlier today that they've hired the person who is going to be sort of the lead of the project. It's the same person who did the Allegiant Stadium on the other side of the highway. So I see that they're saying games are going to be played here in 2028.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I think they can do it because Vegas is really good at building big things.
Well, they've got the weather in their favor, too.
It rains.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we've enjoyed watching the Sox playing in Sacramento?
Yeah.
Is that where they're playing, Patrick? At the minor league field, which is just beautiful because it's
just
small.
It's like a really nice old-fashioned baseball field. I think it is Sacramento.
And in fact,
isn't Sacramento the capital of California? Whatever the capital of California is, that's where they're playing.
That is the capital of California.
And Steve said, so when we're out in Pasadena visiting the kids, maybe we can run up to the field. And I said, Steve, it's 5 hours away.
Yeah.
We're not going to be running up.
That's not going to happen.
It's a very long drive. Yeah, just to see a baseball field. I don't think so. We got so much to talk about. We're going to take a break for news. A break.
We need a break, Patrick.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm back on cucumber Sprite. Seriously, that's on my mind.
Really?
I'm thinking that's
Christine
so refreshing.
Went to town on it. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think the new drink that Popeyes is selling. Have you heard about this?
No.
Pickle lemonade. You can get pickle lemonade just iced, or you can get it frosty. I'm like, yes.
Why is my tongue going?
I know.
Right now, just at the name, pickle lemonade.
It sounds perfect. Oh, my.
I think I saw them at Coachella.
Did you? All right. On that thought, you hang loose or sit tight. We'll come right back, and we're going to start everything off. If you have a Nest thermostat, be listening.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, hang on to every word. Yep. We'll come right back here on WGN.
I've got a mouse I play with every day. He runs across the mat and his tail is long and gray.
He doesn't like cheese. He likes playing games. He's not afraid of cats. He hasn't got a name. He's my computer mouse. He's my double click, single click, run around the map. Computer mouse.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Patrick, you may wonder why we are playing the computer mouse song.
I am.
Because you're thinking, why would you pay that piece of dreck? Really? This is the anniversary of the unveiling of the computer mouse to the masses 60 years ago. 60 years.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It was wood on two wheels. A chunk of wood.
60 years ago just sounds...
crazy. Like,
was that really?
What were they using it?
At the mother of all demos, it was at the Stanford Research Institute, SRI. Do a Google search for Stanford mother of all demos. And Douglas Engelbert did this. I'm doing this from memory, so if I get it wrong, we'll just pretend I'm making this up. But Douglas Engelbert kind of demonstrated 1968 was a demo of what was going to become the future of computers. He had a graphic user interface. He had a wooden mouse that had been around for, you know, a while. And it was the first time that anybody put anything together. And it's a really good look from 1968 of what we now know as a computer. And it predicted a lot of things that we have.
Hmm. I'm looking at a picture of the mouse, the first mouse that he unveiled, that chunk of wood.
And there's a little chip missing from it.
Oh, that's wild. You're right. And it's got wheels under it. Well, God bless him, because I don't even know how one's mind works that way. How you wake up one day and say, we should have this external device that allows us to use this thing that's in front of us that eventually everybody's going to be using. And he was right. So
this Engelbert guy must have been the Sheldon of his time.
Easily, yes. Okay, I said before we took a break that if you have a Nest thermostat, you must listen carefully and closely. Why, Patrick?
If you are running the first or second generation Nest Learning thermostat, these were released back in 2011 or 2012, Google has basically just announced this week, we no longer are going to support them come October. So your smart thermostats that you spend all that money on, go back to being old-fashioned, dumb thermostats.
Wow.
You will no longer be able to control them remotely, so you will not be able to go open up the Nest app or the Google Home app and change your temperature remotely. And you're no longer going to get any updates over the internet. It basically goes back to a dumb thermostat sitting on the wall. If you want to change your temperature, you've got to get up off of the couch and go to the thermostat and change the temperature. Why are they doing this? Well, Nest actually introduced these back again in 2011, 2012, and Google bought Nest. Mm-hmm. I think it was like $3.2 billion, mm-hmm. and that was back in 2014. And Google's kind of saying, you know what? We just don't want to support these anymore. Now, if you have the third or fourth generation Nest thermostat, you don't have anything to worry about. Those keep working. But if you have the old Nest learning thermostats that came when Nest was still not Google,
right?
Those are going to stop working. So it's only affecting first and second generation, third or fourth generation. You're going to continue to get updates. You continue to be able to use the Nest app or Google Home to push your updates. What do you do? I mean, if you've got a first or second generation, and I think I've got two thermostats in my house. One of them is a generation 3. One of them, I think, is a generation 1.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I know somebody who sent me a third generation, which I'll be putting on the wall soon. So thank mm-hmm. you for that. One of your old ones. Google is going to offer you, if you have a first or second generation, and Google knows because you've logged in to the Nest app or the Google Home app, They'll send you an email shortly. They're going to offer you $130 off a new fourth generation thermostat. Those are about $280. So you're going to get you'll need to spend $150 to do the update if you want to do that. Not full price, but you're going to get a pretty good discount. The other thing you can think about is you can kind of take this as, I'm really upset right now at Google that they're doing this to mm-hmm. me. And mm-hmm. I'm going to do this back to Google. Guess what, Google? You're fired, and I'm going to go to one of the competitors. And I know that you guys recently jumped from Google Nest
to Ecobee.
Yep.
And we love it. And one of the reasons that we jumped from Google Nest was that we started having some connectivity problems. There was a nationwide outage. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't access, couldn't control it.
I went to the site that you always talk about, Patrick, over the years, Download Detector. And I would say, wait, Down Detector says that nationwide, oh, wait a minute, it's all around the world people are having problems. And we would be out of town, and I would say, wait.
We were in Florida at one point. Yeah. We were trying to make sure that things would be okay in Chicago.
It was freezing cold in Chicago, and I thought, is the heat even on? It just got to be too stressful.
So we
and that's
wound
one
up,
of the best things about these, is that you can be somewhere in the world, and you can now open up your phone and say, okay, did I leave my heat on?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did I turn it on, or can I turn it on? Or it's really hot outside, can I turn the air conditioning on before I get home? You can do that on your phone with these smart thermostats, but not if you have a first or second generation one after October 25th. So,
okay, a couple things. One, just we would recommend Ecobee. We got it. We fired Google, fired Nest, went with Ecobee. We've been very happy with it. But number two, how does somebody know if they have a first or second generation?
And it's a popular question, and the folks at Google actually have a page that shows you, here's what it looks like, here's what each of the different versions looks like. And they say if you have a big screen, it's a version 3 or 4, or small screen, but too many, I mean, you don't know what it is. Easiest way to do it, in the Nest app, find your thermostat, click on settings, click on technical information. And when you look at the display model, the first digit of the display model, if it's one or two, that's a first or a second generation. If you have a Google Home app, you can then basically open your thermostat settings, look on device information, and it'll tell you the model. I'm going to put this in the show notes so you don't have to write any of these mm-hmm. down, but there's really a simple way to do it through either Google Home or Nest. You can actually do it.
And again, the show notes will be on our blog probably at some point late Sunday.
And one of the other things I do with my show notes is I'll spend a couple days writing them up. And before I'm done with them, I'll kind of copy and paste my show notes into ChatGPT and say, okay, check this out. Does this make sense? Mm. So I'm still doing the work, and that's actually the way you use ChatGPT really well, is don't have it write things for you, but have it sort of as an editor for you. And I said, okay, what else am I forgetting or not doing? And one of the things that ChatGPT came up with that I didn't, and I thought it was a brilliant insight, was if you have a first or second generation Nest thermostat in your house and you're thinking of selling your home, you might have a problem selling your home, because this is going to be your smart thermostat's no longer a smart thermostat. Uh-huh. And the buyers might sit there and say, we need you to discount the price of the home. Mm-hmm. So if you have a first or second generation, it might be time for you to think about getting rid of it, especially if you're going to be selling your home. Really smart idea.
Only other thing that you could have is what we have in Florida.
Oh, please.
And I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't remember the manufacturer.
I'm the one sitting here shaking my head because I say, honey, I'm hot. Make it cool in here as I stand in front of the darn thing.
But the point is, this is a thermostat that we got when we initially had the furnace and air conditioning system put in. And this is as simple as, okay, we're leaving. We don't want bad things to happen. I set it to don't let the house get colder than 66. Don't let the house get warmer than 76. Period. End of story. No Wi-Fi involved. Nobody can hack into it. Nobody can do nothing. We walk in. The house is comfortable. Thank you very much.
The only thing that makes me feel better about the darn thing is every time we've had an HVAC guy at the house, they've always said to you, sir, can you do the thermostat? Because I don't know how to do this.
I crack up at this because
every time
is the HVAC guys who have the latest technology, and they're looking at me like,
I don't know.
It's wonderful old school that does just what I need it to do.
And that's how I look at it every time. I'm hot. Make it cool. It doesn't work. And Patrick, I want to say, you said that Google will be sending out letters to people who are eligible for this $130 rebate or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yes, whatever account you log in with as.
I predict that by the time you join us in a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about the bad actors who've come up with a way to send out letters and hoping that somebody out there has a Google Nest and is going to give them their credit card
because
number.
Now this is in fact something that Google will be sending, because we always say worry if you get emails from people
don't buy it. Now all of a sudden you get this email and you're like, well, I have a Nest. Oh, well, good. Let me get my $130. And, mark my words, 2 weeks, you're going to be talking about that on the radio.
Yeah, we just talked with Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. I bet that's going to be one of our conversations.
One of the scams.
Okay, I will just give you a clue. If they ask you for your account number, they should already have this account number if they are sending you the information. So,
they're going to give you a credit and have you go to Google.com or actually maybe even go to Best Buy and just buy it.
Yeah.
You can buy this for $279 at Best Buy or at Target or at Walmart.
That's the way to do it. All right, Patrick, we're going to take a break, then we'll come right back talking tech with Patrick Crispin here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking technology with Dr. Patrick Crispin. He is the Director of Educational Technology, Keck School of Medicine of USC. And just before we broke, we were talking about Google saying, you're not going to be using that that Nest so much anymore.
The old Nest.
The old Nest.
So let's – the old Nest.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else want to say
version one and version two.
1, 2, 3. The old Nest.
I was answering text about that during the news. So,
but let's stay with Google for a while, for a few moments, because there's some questions about Google Chrome's future, Patrick.
This is kind of interesting. We've been talking about this a couple times over the last couple years. There's a big antitrust case that's going on against Google, and it hasn't been going well for Google. A judge has already ruled that Google illegally maintained a monopoly over online search by, in effect, giving exclusive deals, like paying Apple billions and billions and billions of dollars to be the default search engine on iPhone. So the lawsuit has been kind of gotten to the point where it's like, no, Google's guilty of this. There's no question about it. Now we're at the stage of the court having to figure out, okay, Google's monopoly, what do we do? How do we fix this? Justice Department is actually pushing for really big changes. Their recommendation includes forcing Google to sell Chrome, to say Google will no longer sell Chrome or give it away, but actually sell it to another company. And that's huge because if you think about it, maybe two out of every three people using a web browser right now are using Chrome. It's the number one web browser by far. Next one after that is Safari, which is 17%. Edge has 5%. And Firefox, I'm a Firefox user, only 2%. So sorry about that. So, okay, if Chrome does get sold, who's going to buy it? Because, I mean, the price tag for this thing is not cheap. I would hate to say this. Even if the three of us pulled our money, we're probably going to be a few dollars short of the $50 to $100 billion price tag.
Billion.
For this,
so.
That's billion with a B.
Whoa.
That's a billion with a B. So the court's been basically kind of hearing from the Department of Justice this week saying, we need to break it up. And there are some companies on the sidelines going, you know, we're interested. OpenAI, which has a lot of money, is actually saying, you know, if Chrome was on the market, we'd buy it and kind of build ChatGPT into it. This is actually really, really fascinating. If you know anything about OpenAI, they are married at the hip to Microsoft.
Which gives us Bing, right?
And the fact that they're saying, you know, Bing isn't very good.
Oh,
I think we want to go with Chrome. It's like, oh, this is okay.
Sorry, Bing.
Sorry, Bing. The other companies that have said stepped up, Perplexity, and then surprisingly, the fat kid.
Pause. Perplexity. What the heck is Perplexity?
If I recall, there's an AI. They're an AI company, a smaller AI company. And then the other one that's even more curious, Yahoo. Yahoo, which has not been relevant in a long time. Yahoo is saying that they want to buy it. I don't think that's going to happen. And Yandex, which is a Chinese company, if I believe. Google's basically saying, you can't make us sell this. I mean, it is such a big part of our DNA. It's so closely tied to what we're doing. This is just not going to work. And if you make a sell it, it's actually going to hurt the consumers.
Why can't they just stop doing what they're told is wrong?
They can, but the reality is that if you think about that, one of the ways that Google gets away with being the monopoly with the browser is they pay for the development for the Mozilla Foundation. Oh. Billions and billions of dollars for Mozilla. So if you are using Firefox, Firefox is being funded by Google, which Google could be forced to not pay for anymore. And then Apple is making billions and tens of billions of dollars from Google. And it's not like they need it, but, you know, that's money that they might have to recover someplace else. So just be aware of that. DOJ is asking for a whole bunch of things besides selling Chrome. They're thinking about having Google from paying any companies like Apple to make it the default search engine or Samsung for the department search placement, or to prevent them from letting Motorola sign the deal with some other competitor. They're also talking about requiring Google to share their secret sauce and how they do search, a whole bunch of things. Google obviously is saying, yeah, no, this is wrong. This is terrible. This is basically a remedies trial right now. This is going to last several weeks. We'll get a judgment by later this year, early 2026. I wrote 2025 on our note. Sorry about that. The thing is, Google's already said, we're appealing. I don't care what they say.
Sure.
This isn't going to come for a long time, but just be aware, Google's getting a lot of headwind right now because they're a monopoly, and this could be the next big thing since the Microsoft case, where Microsoft was forced to kind of break things up, especially with Internet Explorer, and it's had a lasting impact.
Interesting, because a listener just texted and said, Patrick, is Chromegate similar to what happened with Microsoft and Internet Explorer?
Very similar. It's basically what that happened in the 90s, where Microsoft really was a major monopoly, forcing everybody into using Internet Explorer, and then eventually they were forced to sell a lot of their products and give things away, and they got penalized. This is the next generation of that same sort of line of thinking, where this company has just gotten too big. Google says, we've gotten too big because we've innovated, and nobody else can keep up with us. But if you look behind the scenes, they're doing some things that are like, guy. Mm-hmm. You're trying to compete against your bad guys, and or you're trying to keep the small guys down, and you can't do that.
When you have them and this is kind of the classic example of, you talk about a tangled web. Boy, yeah. Here we have a tangled web. And like you, I absolutely, Firefox is my default browser. And you talk about the Mozilla Foundation. One of the other things that I still use is Thunderbird, which is the Mozilla Foundation's email program. And it's really, really good. But again, some of the money that's...
is coming from Google. And Google is doing it because they want to say, see, we're helping competitors. But
But I bet if you went out on the street and you surveyed people and you used the word monopoly, I bet you 99% of the people would say, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, well, you got to get, Google's got to be broken up. I mean, they're a monopoly and all, because that just makes it sound like they're the bad guys. They're the big bad guys. But when you really break it down, there's a whole lot of good that comes from what they're doing. And why were they allowed to get this far into the game as the monopoly?
And I don't want to get political here, but I will ask a question, and I don't know that any of us have the answer. There's a lot of unusual things going on in Washington right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised if some of those unusual things prolong this scenario even longer.
Well, remember, this started back under Lena Khan's watch when during the Biden administration, mm-hmm. and has continued under the Trump administration, because it turns out both sides are kind of realizing, you know what, monopolies are bad, and the new administration kind of realizes, you know, Google hasn't been very nice to conservatives. Maybe we can find a way to kind of nudge them in one direction.
So there's... along with this tangled web, there is the tangled web of the reality of politics at the moment.
And pretty much. So we've got the law and politics intermingling.
Before we move on from the subject, a listener says, what about Chromebook? How does this affect Chromebook?
It doesn't. That's the nice thing about Chromebook is it's got the Chrome operating system, but that's not what they're talking about selling here or divesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about, in effect, the Chrome operating system. Although there is talk about making Google get rid of Android as well. Not to stop it, but to sell Android to somebody else.
Hmm.
And then it's a hop, skip, and jump from Android to selling the Chrome OS as well. But we're talking about basically the Chrome browser as being the focus, I think, is where you're going to be mm-hmm. doing.
And how many other browsers are based on the Chrome browsing system?
So many are based on Chromium. It's not even funny. All the biggies.
Wow.
The subject now turns to Facebook.
It ain't what it used to be. Right, Patrick?
I think a lot of people are saying it. It's like, you know, I miss the old Facebook, because what I'm getting right now on Facebook, this just isn't working. Mm-mm. It's garbage.
I can't tell you how many times during the past week I will be going through my Facebook feed and I have to stop and say, I don't want to see this stuff, and I have to manually go and say, okay, let me look at what my friends are doing to get rid of some of the crud that they're throwing at me.
And they actually did add a new My Friends tab so you can see just only your friends. Mm-hmm. So that's a neat thing. But one of the big things is there's something that goes on Facebook, and it's not just Facebook, it's all social media, which is called engagement farming. And the way it works is, if I'm a spammer or I'm a shady account, I can then post some low-quality, sort of emotionally manipulated content. Things like, hey, name a city without the letter A in it, only 1% can solve this riddle. And these posts take no effort to write, but they're designed to trick you into liking, sharing, commenting on it, not because the content's any good, but it's there because you're engaging with it ends up making them more money. The more eyeballs that you put on their posts, the better, because they're going to actually kind of boost their visibility in the Facebook algorithm. And if they're more visible, then they get more followers, they get more clicks, and more revenue. So there are bad guy actors out there who look at this and say, my golly, I can post the worst garbage ever and make lots of money with it. Why wouldn't I? And the answer is because eventually the folks at Meta finally wake up and say, yeah, we're not going to let you do that anymore. So this week, Meta announced new measures to crack down on it. If you are a page or an account and you post this spammy content, you know, you won't believe there are seven secrets. You won't believe number six. You're going to have limited reach, and it's only going to go to the people who are deliberately following you. So your junk isn't going to go into other people's feeds, which is actually a really good thing. You're also going to lose the ability to make money off of those posts, which is yay. Hopefully that reduces the incentive for these bad actors to post bad garbage. They're also going after the spam networks out there, the people who are making fake accounts or cloned accounts and trying to push out as much garbage as possible through multiple channels. And I posted a link to the announcement from Facebook. So just be aware, Facebook really is aware that it blows. and the folks at Meta are realizing, we need to fix this pretty quick or people are just going to stop using it and come back. So if you still use Facebook and are getting frustrated by the garbage on it, Facebook is going to hopefully start cracking down on some of the spammers and the fake engagement posts, and you'll start getting more posts from your friend.
Sadly, with this crackdown, not a week goes by that someone we know that is legitimately using Facebook to advertise their gigs or whatever it is that they want to share with their literally thousands and thousands of followers, and they get shut down. And they've got no one they can talk to, no one that they can beg. Sidney Friedman, the mentalist, musical mentalist, he was one that he was shut down. And basically Facebook said, you don't exist. This is all spam. Mm-hmm. And this is how he got word out about his shows and communicated with people who wanted to know about how they could book him. Musicians have experienced that. And
there have been several musicians that have had to start other Facebook pages to try to stay in touch with the people that follow them.
So it gets so worse because the scammers are actually, what they're doing is, and we'll give you a made-up example here. Let's say that I know that there's a Steve and Johnny Show Facebook page. I could go and create my The Real Steve and Johnny Facebook page, which is fake, with a whole bunch of garbage, and then report the Steve and Johnny Facebook page and have it taken down.
Yeah.
And the scammer is then taking the users and followers and everything else from the real people.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Facebook is going to start cracking down on this, fingers crossed. But Facebook makes lots of promises. Let's see if they deliver.
Are you hearing that Instagram is doing a similar kind of crackdown? And I mention that because I follow this young man. He's 10 years old. He's a fashion designer. He has 4 million followers. This is amazing because we've been watching him since he was 5 years old as a fashion designer. And he was shut down last week. Uh-huh. Closed down. Yeah, you don't even exist. We don't need you anymore. Oh, what? And thankfully, all of these followers found out about it because his mom took that information to another social media page and said, you've got to help us. And that's what brought him back onto Instagram.
And Patrick, isn't a lot of this happening to what we would call legacy accounts, accounts that have been around for a while, so they have a lot of followers? And I'm thinking specifically of a friend of ours who had her Facebook page taken over by someone, and
she'd been there at the beginning,
posting
all her pictures of her family and her trips to Disney,
and now she can't get back some pictures that she wants because
she was shut down. And then she actually opened up another page, and they put two and two together, and they shut her down on that page too. And
well, we've talked on the air about my dad's Facebook page. I tried to turn it into a legacy page.
Yep.
My dad died, and I contacted Facebook and said, can we turn this page off or turn it into a legacy account? And they said, sure. What you need to see is death certificate. My dad's name is Bob Crispin. His death certificate says Robert Crispin.
You're right.
And he said, no, I'm sorry. He signed up as Bob Crispin. So unless his death certificate said Bob Crispin, we can't. And it's like, you've got to, you really can't be so stupid, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. A listener at 815 says, most of my friends have left Facebook and gone to TikTok, which leads us to the future of TikTok, because that's been extended too, hasn't it?
Until June 19th. So the idea was that TikTok had to be divested and sold to an American buyer. So ByteDance is kind of in the talks with a couple different companies. Unlike with Chrome, because the announcement for Chrome is still kind of new, with TikTok, everybody is signing up for this thing. Potential buyers have shown up, including Oracle, Amazon, Andreessen Horowitz, and Blackstone. If you don't know about Andreessen Horowitz, they're a venture capital firm that Mark Andreessen founded Netscape and then went on and made billions of dollars, being an angel investor in everything. And Blackstone is one of the venture capital firms out there, a big one. Frank McCourt's Project Liberty Consortium and Walmart, maybe? The thing is, we don't know if ByteDance is going to be willing to sell TikTok. And this whole thing about, you know, giving until June 19th to sell it, there's nothing in law that actually allows this law to be postponed being enforced. The law said it should have gone back in effect on January 19th, but
so we're already on shaky ground.
We live in a world where the Department of Justice said, yeah, we know what the law says, but we're going to be going in a different direction.
Yes.
We've only got a couple minutes, but a very quick thing on the from the category of This Week in Hacks.
A weird one.
Yeah, if you are Hertz Dollar Thrifty rental car customers, your data may have been breached. This happened between October and December of last year. And data included in the breach includes name, contact information, date of birth, credit card information, driver's license information, and if you had worked for the companies, any workers' compensation claims. Small Number actually had their Social Security numbers leaked as well.
Oh, jeez.
Hertz is saying that they are not aware of any sort of use of this information, but we know it's out there. You are able to, and you can contact Hertz, or I'll put a link in the show notes. They've hired a company called Kroll, K-R-O-L-L, and you can do 2 years of identity monitoring and dark web monitoring services for free. This is one of those few ones where I actually did sign up for it, so I'll check it out. Just be aware that Hertz Dollar Thrifty car customer, your data might be out there. And if you get any emails from Hertz Dollar or Thrifty in the future, you got to be careful because your data is out there, and it could be a fake person contacting you.
I bet you're going to get a piece of snail mail about that if you were a user.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your stay in Las Vegas and hug the boy for us and be good. And
by the way, I love the picture of Joseph by the Coke sign.
Yes.
That was such a...
You're having a lot of fun and enjoy it.
You're having a great time.
And if you need bail money, don't call us.
Hey, I'm proud to say I have won 70 cents on this trip.
70 cents.
I won't tell you how much it cost me to get that 70 cents.
Okay.
Take care, Patrick. Talk to you soon.
See you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.